and welcome to the Interracial Drawn Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. What's up, dude?
Not a whole heck of a lot.
All right, well, good. Good to be back on the show again this week, episode 107. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. And if you've been here for a while, you should know you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can also find us on our website, interracialjohn.com. You can also connect with us on social media. We have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And we love feedback.
Yeah, and where is it at?
Yeah, where people, is the fucking feedback at?
The hell?
Where are all of yous? Get off your asses. We don't ask for anything else. All we ask for is feedback. Get on it. You can leave us feedback a couple of different ways.
Notice me, senpai. Notice me.
You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, which we totally appreciate. And if you leave one there and it's 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air. You can also email us. You can send us an email, interracialjohn, again, J-A-W-N, at gmail.com. And easiest enough, you can pick up your phone, dial 657-JOHNERS. That's 657 J-A-W-N-E-R-S. It's under 3 minutes and not really offensive. We will play it here on the air. And shout out to Rod and Karen from the Blackout who tips for our general feedback rules. We also use hashtag TheJohn for our official hashtag of the show.
Hello, is somebody there? I'd like to leave a message on how ugly your new
Interracial John
panel is. It's about such stupid people barbecuing in Canada. It's about criminal men on the show. It's the most ugly show I ever turned on in my life. I am never going to watch this.
Interracial John.
So are none of my friends. Ugliest channel.
Interracial John.
That I've ever seen in my life. There's no substance to that show.
There's no substance.
It's ugly.
It's ugly, guys.
You jackasses. I hope that channel falls apart next week. Nobody likes it. You jackasses.
I love it. She's got to be like 60 something.
I love that she, like, you know, you can just change the channel, man. Like, not that serious.
She called. Listen.
Jackasses.
She hated that show enough.
She did.
To take a minute of her time and call in. If you happen to maybe like our show.
Yeah.
You can take a minute and leave a review.
Yeah, we'd love that. And as you said, we don't have any reviews, but we did get a voicemail. I haven't actually even listened to it yet, so hopefully it's not crazy. So here we go.
Live.
Hi, Leslie. Hi, Drew. This is Cassie. Huh? I was calling because
hey,
I saw the other week Leslie had to deal with a few trolls.
Oh, Lord, these trolls.
And I was looking through the icons because I was typing something, and I was like, you know what? The show and Leslie and Drew don't have an emoji.
We don't have an emoji. That's
and
true.
And I was trying to find a perfect one, and I couldn't pick one out. I started with a ladybug, but I realized that would only have significance to me because my house was infested with ladybugs at one point.
I wish that's what we had, ladybugs.
Which is interesting and annoying and terrifying problem, but it really is very isolated to certain unfortunate people like me. Anyways, I was wondering, what do you guys want your emoji?
A Johnmoji?
Talk to you guys later.
I don't
Have
know.
A great week. Have a great show. Bye.
Cassie, thank you for
That's
calling.
That's a great question.
The John
Thanks for calling, Cassie.
Well, our logo is the Philadelphia Love logo.
Hmm.
And
let me look at the emojis. Let me go in here. I'm going to look on my phone at the emojis and see if there's anyone that, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's us. Like, if I was picking my own emoji, it would be the side eye or the thinking face, but I think that's too generic. So we need something like inanimate or something.
I'm thinking something that's like half black and half white, but
I don't think they have
like
that
yin
one.
Yang-y.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be. I have to look through all of these emojis.
John
really
emoji.
give it some thought and see what would be good for the John. So I will look and see.
I don't like, how could you make an emoji be like very white? Like my,
well, there's a half moon. And it's half dark and half yellow, half nighttime and half daytime. So that would be a good one.
That's getting closer.
Kind of into that one. That's a possibility.
Well, let's just do the obvious and let's go to the Google machines. Is there an interracial emoji?
Okay, the Google machines.
Yeah, let's see what the Googles has to say. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a whole bunch of them. There's fucking tons of them. There's obviously there's a app.
Yeah, but that's not a standard emoji. They have emojis for everything, but that doesn't mean you can just use it anywhere. So she's talking about a standard one that anybody would be able to use, and it would be associated with us. Not like we could create our own fucking emoji if we wanted to.
Oh my Jesus! Some of these are really bad.
I'm sure.
Do not Google interracial emojis and go to the second page. Please.
Uh-huh. I figured that much. What's this
one? I'm trying to think. There's like, yes, these are pictures more than emojis.
Yeah, I don't have to think. The moon, the half moon is definitely speaking to me currently. But I'm gonna go through the rest of these and see.
This one's in a...
What? I'm afraid. Why are you laughing like that?
The white finger pointing emoji and the black circle okay emoji, as if you know how you make like the two fingers are fucking.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, no, we're not. That's not going to be it.
No, not that one.
No.
I'm just saying that's what someone came up with.
Well, that person's an idiot. So yeah.
I'm not saying we had to use it. I'm just saying if you Google interracial emojis,
oh, that's what you'll see.
You get a white finger fucking a black finger pussy.
Mm-hmm. Could we just use the smoke puff? I would be down with that one.
Why
that
the smoke puff?
Hello. Why a smoke
puff? That's not interracial, Johnny.
It's us.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's like, who's the like poster child for interracialness?
I don't know. I don't want to say who I thought of first, so we'll just leave it alone.
Who'd you think of first? Come on, tell me. You have to say it now. Who'd you think of?
I don't. I can't say it. It's so
Why
horrible.
Not? You have to say it.
No, I don't have to say it. I definitely don't. I'll tell you. I'm not saying it.
Really? This is too deep? This is too...
It's the worst one. It's terrible.
Well,
You can imagine who it is.
What'd you go, O.J. Nicole?
Of course.
Of course. So why you didn't want to say O.J. Nicole? Because she's dead and he's a murderer?
Yeah. In jail? Gee, imagine that.
Imagine that.
No, just that reason, you know, that little reason. Yeah. Anyways, we do have a guest today. Nick, too, could not be with us, but we are lucky enough to be in the presence of her cohort, R to the Edgy, one Reggie from What's the Tea. So we're going to bring him on soon. But we wanted to catch up first and just talk a little bit about, as we announced last week, I got verified on the Twitters.
Ha-bing.
Booyah. So I wanted to talk about that verified life, as I like to refer to it. It's been really interesting. I mean, you don't really get anything additional, but I've noticed my reach is definitely significantly, you know, been boosted by my verified status. So, for example, last week on the show, if you recall, I read off all of the women directors that directed all of the episodes of Ava DuVernay and Oprah Winfrey's upcoming show starts in 2 weeks, Queen Sugar. And I talked specifically about the fact that Ava gave all these women this job and now they've all of them have booked more work on other shows this upcoming season. And I went through their names and talked about what shows they're going to be working on. So I actually had an infographic that had all the information I was using. So I shared it on Twitter and I just said, oh, just talked about Ava Tech. Today's her birthday. On the show tonight, The John, and just look at the amazing work she's doing, transforming the world. And I put the infographic. So not 20 minutes later, I see a DM pop up. Who's DMing me? I don't get a lot of DMs. And most of the time people DM me, it's like somebody's died or something. So I go into it, not like somebody I know, but like, you know, a black person. And so I go into it and I open it and it says Ava Tech. I said, oh no, this can't be real. So Ava saw my tweet because I'm verified and she followed me and DM'd me an XO for my tweet and she liked and retweeted my tweet and I told her happy birthday and she said thanks.
That's that blue dot, dude.
That blue dot.
Blue dot, dot, blue dot, 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 dot.
And then today I had another experience with, I want to make sure I pronounce her name correctly, but Marsai, I think that's her name, Marsali from... Blackish, who plays Diane, the youngest daughter on Blackish.
Okay.
And I had saw that she had announced that she got cast as the new, the next American Girl movie was going to be about, she was going to star in it. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. It is Marsai. I was right. And so I subsequently saw announcement from American Girls about their newest doll, which is a girl who, a black girl growing up in 1960s era Detroit. And it's a really cute doll. It has like a flip haircut and cool homeroom glasses. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. So I quote tweeted that and I just said, hey, I wonder if this is the character that Marseille is going to play. And I tagged her. She wrote me back and said, yeah, it is. And I wrote back and said, oh, that's so cool. And I tagged her again and said, she's going to look so cute in that fashion, the era from that fashion. You know, congratulations. And she went back in, thanks, with a heart emoji. So
nice.
Those are my two cool interactions this week.
You were talking about your, that. What do you call it? Like that
Verified Life.
That Verified Life.
Yep, yep.
And I was trying to think, like, we got a song tonight. And I don't know why. I was thinking, you got like a little circle, a little check mark. And didn't Jamie Kennedy have a circle dot song? But I don't know if that's appropriate.
No, it's not. So please don't play that, because I was talking about a child just now. So.
Okay. Well, your circle Verified Life. I don't know what the circle dot song was, but you got to get
it. Like circle, circle.
You just said dot, circle, circle dot. I don't know what. But anyway, you need a verified Twitter Life game song. Because
well,
now you
maybe
get
can think of that.
You get into those Ava DuVernay DMs and shit, dude.
It's pretty crazy. Does she DM me? I thought it was like, ooh, David DM me.
What the what? What?
She's amazing. I'm very excited for the show too. So
yeah. So you want to get into it? Get a guest on the show?
Yeah, let's go grab Reggie.
Call Reggie.
Let's get into the show. And we are back. We are so excited to have back on the show one half of the What's the Tea podcast. Welcome, Reggie. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, just like half the league in the bag, not the whole tea bag.
But we were saying it's cool because we had Nick Jew on the show without you, then we had you both on, and now you're here. So it's
like, exactly.
It's like the podcast like cycle, right? Like you bat the first, second, third, the homer. We got the What's the Tea cycle.
That's right. That's right. For Yay. Those who don't know Reggie, he is an actor, a son, a part-time lover, and a full-time asshole. He, as I said, is one of the co-hosts of What's the Tea. Oh, yeah. You wrote this whole intro. Here we go. And he podcasts with his best friend, Nicole, at Nick Jew, and stands for Serena Williams, Michelle Obama, and his mama. So there you go.
Yeah, you forgot.
All still true. That's so nice.
We like podcast official. She's got like a form, like a guest intro form. Like, oh, you're coming on. Like, you got to fill out the form. And isn't that cute, though? I love
That's
it.
That's my OCD, though.
It's awesome. I love it. I love it.
It's bad. I think
fantastic.
Chris from Insanity Check, the first time he was on the show, he was like, hit me up. He's like, can you share that form with me? Because, I'll use that.
Shoot that that's my really way one smart. Time. Shoot that one time.
Yeah, excellent. So, Reggie, what's going on with you? What's been happening? What's up? What's up?
Oh, golly. What's up? So, I'm not in New York, even though I was just there like 2 days ago.
I was going to say, I just listened to the show this morning, and you were definitely there. So.
Yeah. What's going on? The show that I was working on in San Diego was great, and now we're going to do it in San Francisco, in a couple of weeks. So that's exciting. The U.S. Open is going on. So tennis all around.
Tennis.
And of course, Serena Williams making history and being excellent everywhere she goes.
I saw a picture of her, what's her name? Simone Manuel, and also what's the fencer's
the
name?
The fencer,
Drew?
Yes.
Muhammad. I can't pronounce it, but it's
it was a picture of all three of them, and
yes,
they were
we
like,
"Do not know her name."
No, we don't. Mm-hmm. I could spell it, but I can't say it.
It's I T H. You can. Spell
I haven't
it.
Heard anybody else say it. That's the real deal. Get on it. Regular journalist.
Yeah, somebody
people.
Else get on it. Say her name.
Just say
her
it
name.
So that I can know how to say it. So that's all really good. Now, as I said, you're an actor. That's important. So there's been this like slew of movies that I saw. Well, I saw two previews for two movies recently.
Okay.
That have jumped feet first back into the magical Negro pond.
Oh, God. Oh, what are they?
So one of them is called Mr. Church, stars one Eddie Murphy.
What? He's still making movies?
Yeah, he's still out. They still giving him checks. So there he goes.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
The other one stars Demon Hansu. And I'll have to look up the name of that one. But it's been really interesting seeing this trope come back. And I don't. It's such a weird thing to me because it's always like the magical black male Negro.
Sorry, I know it's late, but.
Empty Hodge.
It's Ibtaj.
Oh, Ibtaj.
And on the how to
thank
pronounce
you, Google?
On it's Ibtihaj. Yes. Ibtaj. On the how to pronounce difficulty scale, 5 out of 5.
Wow. See?
Ibtaj.
Is there other ones?
Ibtaj.
No, that's like bad.
Ibtaj.
Ibtaj.
Ibtaj. These robotic voices are giving me everything.
That's hilarious. So I'm always, it's always like a black male, you know.
That's the magical
trope. Magical Negro. And it's mm-hmm. just interesting to me about this, like, duality that society has, where this is the most, you know, feared portion of our society, quote unquote. And then at the same time, we have this, like, really uncomfortable trope of them coming to rescue white people.
You mean like the Bagger Vance style stuff?
All of that.
Yeah.
The thing is, the opposite of that is movies like Captain Fantastic, which otherwise would have been my favorite movie I've seen this year, where there were zero people of color that spoke in the entire movie.
Oh,
and you're just like, what world do you live in?
Yeah. We saw a preview for something that was about New York, and like it basically was like a gentrification tale or something. It was like, again, it was like New York, and they're going on New York and New York, New York. I'm like, was there a single black person?
No, that was that Brooklyn movie. And I was like, listen.
There wasn't a black person.
People been
in black people in the whole movie. I'm like, come on, baby. Come on. We was there.
Black people been in Brooklyn since Brooklyn was Brooklyn. Like, literally.
Right.
There's never been a time there were not black souls in Brooklyn. So that's just...
Yeah, that's just lazy. That's just lazy.
What was the other? You said
that's
there was
just
two lazy. Examples.
The other one is with Demon Hansu. The point isn't about the two movies. I just think it's funny. They keep coming back. You would think after, you know, I would say the almost comical nature that we all treat these movies at this point, that they wouldn't continue to get greenlit, and yet here and still.
Well, maybe this is the last few. Like, not only the comical nature with which, like, the black community, but like, you now, you got to understand now, white communities are like, they're not like people that are like, all lives matter aren't down for magical Negro tales. Like, that's not their, like, you know
yes,
what I'm saying?
They are. That's
no, they
that
are they?
That is the that's that is what they want. Because look, all of the tales they tell themselves about black people already are. It's how all of a sudden we turn into hulking beasts.
Okay, but
it's how we magically kill ourselves in jail with no absolutely.
I'll say this,
baby.
The fuck Black Lives Matter people, they would have seen Bagger Vance. Okay, the fuck
of course they would have, especially because it's a movie about golf.
But I'm just saying, fuck Black Lives, folk. They ain't gonna be seeing magical Negro movies anymore.
Right.
They might be. So now you might not see greenlit magical Negro movies. This might be like, you know, to produce it now.
The same people that love whoever's on their fantasy football team
exactly.
and their fantasy basketball team.
But they think they own those people.
No, they will. They like as long as it's convenient for them.
Yeah, they own those people.
As long as it doesn't make them uncomfortable. Reggie, you're right.
Yep.
As long as it doesn't make them uncomfortable, we'll watch anything. You're absolutely right.
It's
you're
the
right.
truth.
It's got nothing to do with nothing as long as it doesn't make us feel racially insecure.
As long as we don't have to talk to him or ride an elevator with him.
Exactly. It's
good.
Cool.
I tweeted that the other day, like, me, all white people are just inherently racist, like, you know, some degree, deal with it. Them. Oh my God, I can't believe you fucking said that. Black guy walks by. Them. Locked door.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe you said that. Click.
Click. Yeah.
True
so, Michael Harriott from The Root has decided, in the light of these two new movies, to start the school for magical Negroes.
That's brilliant.
An acting school or like an actual school?
Yeah,
like
the school.
Harry Potter?
Here are a few of the courses that they'll be offering.
Oh, no.
Introduction to Being Patient with White People. Mm-hmm. That's taught by the writers of Driving Miss Daisy. The Lawrence Fishburne Method of Knowing More Than Actual Hero of the Movie Without Offending White People.
That's great.
That's a good one. Very important.
Yet
the white person's the one. The white
person's
the one.
That's super important.
That's really important.
How
really
to important. Never raise your voice in the presence of Caucasians. This is very critical. I mean, listen, it's how Barack Obama became president. Let's be true.
I still have to learn that lesson.
Listen. Advanced shuck and jive. Critical.
Critical.
Critical. Mm-hmm. And Stephen King, the magical Negro master. So,
you know, I feel like there's maybe not that there was something left out, but there's some sort of like... yeah, I don't know. Where's the, like, once you're, I don't know what I'm thinking, but, like, you know, the whole fucking, like, crapping on other black people because you want to be, I don't know.
Yes, trying, the trying too hard, yeah.
Like, you want to be accepted by white people, like, so you're crapping on black people harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Uncle Ruckus. It's the Uncle Ruckus. That's right. That's methodology. Right.
Uh-huh. Michael continues. If those of you who think that this trope is just, you know, it's not for us anymore, he says that you don't understand magic. If you, too, would like the opportunity to shake off the chains of the negative connotations that society has foisted upon people of color, why not fashion yourself into a caricature of what white people want you to be? A perpetually smiling, insignificant piece of scenery meant for furthering plots and advancing the aims of good-hearted white folk. Plus, when they're finished with magical Negroes, they don't shoot you in the arm and claim that you are reaching for the gun. Instead, there's just a teary-eyed hug, after which the protagonist, pronounced white people, tearily watches you walk into the disappearing horizon while the credits roll immediately after a single teardrop rolls down your chocolate face.
Now, true story. That's all real.
You know who could have benefited? You know who's getting a lot of flack because they did not take this course? Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, Colin Kaepernick is not
doing this? Are we doing this?
I know he was your Hey Boo this week.
Let me strap in. We doing it.
He was your Hey Boo.
I don't think he was on our list even of things.
No, he's definitely. We could talk about it right now. So obviously, everybody knows what's been going on. Colin has decided not to sit for the national anthem and stand. And obviously, white people are all up in their feelings.
Oh my!
Black people is mad too.
As are these, you know, apparently superstar athletes that have yet to say shit about anything else that's going on in the world. But God forbid Colin Kaepernick decide to sit down during a fucking song. And then we took a turn because all of a sudden he wasn't patriotic. He was against veterans, blah, 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 blah. And so now what started last night was this hashtag veterans for Kaepernick with a bunch of veterans, a lot of them. Just tweeting out that, you know, don't speak for me. Don't speak for us. You don't know shit. Colin can do whatever the fuck he wants to. And shut the fuck up about it. That's America. So it's been interesting. I mean, I thought the hashtag was really great to see just them, you know, having a way to support him. But it's been interesting seeing the message that Colin was trying to deliver, which was about systemic racism, police brutality, in the country, and seeing supremacy and racist like completely morph it into now all we're talking about is the military.
It's an A+ course in taking the bait and looking like a fucking fool.
Yep.
Cause it's like, y'all, you didn't. It didn't have to be this way. It didn't have to be this way, y'all. All you had to do was say, like, "Oh, well, I understand how he feels. It's tough. I don't agree with this protest." The end. You don't have to look like a fucking clown.
You didn't have to say anything. You could have just said, "I don't got to talk about that. I'm rich and I'm retired. Deuces."
That's what I would say.
Who asked you, Drew Brees? You don't need to say shit about shit.
Baby, who asked you, Jerry Rice?
Jerry Rice. Who asked you,
John Isner? Who asked
Terrell Owens?
Oh my God! Ooh,
sit down.
Why?
You?
Yeah. Even we're talking now just generally, but there was a great, I think, Twitter essay by Absurdist Words. I think it's a Medium article now or another article somewhere about why are we even like, what is the connection between sports, throwing a ball, right? Let's get real. Throwing a ball and patriotism in the military. It's completely fucking ridiculous. It's absurd. It's only like recent, like 1930s. The goddamn fucking armed services paid millions, like $20 million to the non-for-profit National Football League to fly fucking F-16s and have the military out. Like literally these like acts of patriotism that everyone's all up in arms and pissy about aren't like, they're inappropriately conflated with fucking football and at our dime. We're paying to fucking have this bullshit fucking like lip service fucking whitewashed faux patriotism. And like the thing I'm getting a little ranty. I should take it down.
We talked earlier about Facebook.
We talked about Facebook and I really am so close to deactivating my profile. I haven't even told you this, Leslie.
Uh-oh.
I literally like, I fucking just, the number of things I share about fucking like supremacy and just black lives, it's like 98.9%. The like heat map of words over the last 2 years, like black lives matter, like all sorts of shit. Literally, like, I'm not
black,
even kidding.
Black.
Yeah, right. So I get people aren't going to be like, you know.
Do they think you were Sean King?
No, but they're not going to be favored in my shit. Like, I get it, right? People aren't engaging with me. I see what people are talking about, what they're not talking about. I get it, but I don't fuck around with anything, whatever. 52 pictures of my cat get liked, I got it, whatever. Now, here's my fucking problem.
Uh-oh.
oh, these liberal white fucking friends of mine talking about Kaepernick. They haven't said one fucking mother goddamn 2 cent opinion about nothing. Freddie Gray's spine severed and they all go free. Nothing. Tanks rolling around. Fucking nothing. But a goddamn fucking dude that plays sports for millions of dollars decides to sit the fuck down through a faux fucking stupid paid for patriotic horse shit. And now you're going to have like 82 fucking comments and conversations and 32 cents and back and forth and water cooler. And I just want to say, no, fuck you.
Well, and the other thing that is so frustrating for me is that, like, I, you know, was working on a play that was talking about, it was about football. Mm. And they did interviews with armed service members, and they actually hate the, like, dog and pony show when the NFL drags them out and sits them on the 50-yard line, but then they have to get back and take the bus home because they don't have enough fucking money to buy a car because our veteran services are disgusting.
Yep.
So, exactly. Like, really, if you want to talk about respecting our country, let's talk about how the people that have served several tours of duty in Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan and all over the world in the National Guard, in all branches of the military,
yep,
can't even afford food. Like, true, go fuck yourself. And it's a song written by a person who actively hated black people.
Yeah,
so, like, really?
We talked. It's so funny. We talked about that, the racist
third
stanza.
Verse. Yeah.
Like, literally 6 weeks ago, yeah, or 4 weeks ago.
4 episodes ago.
Obviously, well outside this info, we started this new segment called Hidden History. And it was the first segment, that the first time that we did it was with this, the national anthem. So to see all of this happen, like, right after that was really weird.
Yeah, and, you know, and Reggie, if you're going to be talking about, like, you know, servicemen and football, you don't got to talk about all of them. Talk about Pat Tillman. He fucking left the fucking NFL, got fragged, got friendly fired, got shot in the fucking back, and then they covered it up and used his death as some goddamn grotesque
recruitment
bullshit, dude.
So disgusting.
Yeah, the whole thing is just gross. So for all these people to fucking, and you know what it is? The anger is because you just want to enjoy football. You just want to fucking enjoy football. Do not take my national pass. This Black Lives Matter stuff makes me uncomfortable. I have to drive by my neighbor's sign with that sign out every day. I feel uncomfortable. At least I can sit in my living room and watch football. Oh, my God. Now I can't even do that. Colin Kaepernick sat down. The temerity. Right.
No, to me, there's
meanwhile,
a lot of, like,
hanging a Blue Lives Matter flag outside of their house.
It's a lot of, to me, all of this stuff around sports. Like, sports has this other undercurrent, especially when we're talking about black athletes, of paternalistic ownership on the part of white people. And so when you see this, when we see these moments intersect, it gets really ugly really quickly because they think, and you hear it in their rhetoric, you're lucky enough to have this. What did Sarah Palin say? We need to sack this guy because he's lucky he even has the opportunity to have blah blah blah. It's always about how they not about
what
Colin's hard work
them.
Not about the fact that he has a college degree, that he's an intelligent person, that he is lucky. He's lucky to even have grown up in this white household.
Listen, it wasn't even until, like, the late 60s until baseball players had, like, collective bargaining free agency.
Yeah.
Owners, that's an interesting word, could sell them to other teams.
Yep.
Oh, well, man.
Absolutely. All of that. Well, let's get into it, Drew.
And I know Sarah Palin ain't talking about nothing.
Oh, my gosh. She's the worst.
Uh-oh. I just need to sit down and shut the hell up.
You know what? Go look at Russia from your window, please. Just stop.
Okay, go look at your illegitimate grandchildren.
Yeah, go look at all of them.
The news is coming on.
The news is coming on.
Coming on.
In fact, I wanted to, this piece, and we talked before, but so there's a dad with an interracial family who opens up about his own bias to confront unfair stereotypes. And I haven't even looked at that article, but before I got into it, I got a note from someone on Twitter that was like, I don't want to say eerily the same, but so someone, you know, pinged me on Twitter, is like, hey, you know, I hope you don't mind, I'm going to send you a really long DM. And I was like, worry emoji, like, you know, bring it or something. Mm. And turned out to be really nice. And I'm not going to read the whole thing or even send his name. But if you want, the Twitter handle is no one of consequence. But he's biracial. product. I'll read his words. Enjoy your tweets. As well, your wife's. I'm mixed. My dad was white. My mom is black. My dad died in 2011. They were married for 40 years. My dad, who I loved beyond words, was racist as fuck. And my mom, a militant ass Negro. Seems an odd combination. I guess it was. But because despite those facts, they loved the shit out of each other. When my dad died and I went in and saw just how much of his life was dedicated to taking care of my mom, it was wild. He raised her two black children from another marriage of his own. But despite all of this, his opinions at large were repugnant, racist, ignorant, and wrongheaded. Anyway, I'm not writing this to bash my dad, but the relationship, the fact that they loved each other despite their differences, made me very suspect of other interracial relationships, and to this day I still am. Sometimes difficult as fuck to figure out who's just having who's living out some 1800s fantasy, who's full of self-loathing, and who actually loves the person they are for who they are.
That's right.
So he has a bunch more as background. He talks about the woman he's with, I think it's his wife now, who's also biracial, and there's a picture that he sent that's absolutely just gorgeous and adorable, but it's him, and they're both biracial, and I don't like to use colorism, but you know, let's say like lighter skin, and then him with his very dark-skinned black mother, and she with her very white mother, and it's just the whole story was interesting, but I've heard this from other people about interracial relationships,
right.
And so he was asking me about you and I, and I always say, I fell in love with a person that happens to be black. Like, that wasn't anything I sought out. But I find a lot of the interracial dating scene to be inappropriately fetishist, you know, like the swirl world kind of thing. Like, when you see someone's like, I just want to be with a black chick. I've always wanted to be with a black chick.
As a person who's dated interracially a lot, yes.
It's very weird. And I remember when we first, you know, when like Facebook groups and all of that shit started popping off, and I joined a few people, invited me to a couple of them, and I was like in there and I was like, this is so creepy and kind of weird, because I don't think of, obviously we are an interracial relationship or interracial marriage, but I don't think of like, I went and found a white guy to marry.
Right.
So and that's always the conversation about it. Like, there's
what some people do.
Right. So to me, I was like, this isn't for me, because that's not me. So I don't know what I would be doing in there. So I do recognize that, and I can see that. And it's funny because this guy, Frank Somerville, who's an anchor in San Francisco's Fox affiliate, KTV.
Oh, I know.
You know Frank Somerville? Excellent. So he shared a post on Facebook on Monday, and he wrote that he has a biracial family, and he recently had a racial bias against a black man whom he saw walking in the direction of a white woman at a bus stop at night. He wrote that he instinctively told himself to keep an eye on the man in case he planned to bother the woman in some way. So here's a quote. As he was walking, I noticed a little boy running to catch up with him. The little boy then grabbed his dad's hand. All of a sudden, my whole view of the guy changed. I realized he was a dad just walking down the street with his son. I realized that he was, quote, okay, and wasn't going to do anything. I was so angry with myself. The man did absolutely nothing wrong, and yet I initially saw him as a possible threat. And let's be honest, the main reason was because of his skin color. The whole way home, I was thinking to myself, I grew up in Berkeley. I have a black daughter, and yet I still have that fucking bias. What the fuck is wrong with me? And on top of all that, I just had a talk with my daughter about how people might treat her differently from her, quote, white sister based solely on her skin color. And now here I am doing the exact same thing. I was and am really disappointed in myself, but it also shows how strong that bias can be. And I hope by telling this story that maybe it will get other people to think about their biases. We all have them, and the only way to eliminate them is to realize that they're there in the first place.
Yeah, and here's the thing. This is, and I love the way he phrased it, and I wish he had taken it like one step further. It is implicit bias, and it's literally, he's like mad at himself, like, no. You're just a fucking white dude that's been raised in a white supremacist society. And let's be honest, there are choices that you and your parents made that ended up segregating you with other white folk, and you didn't have some, you know, interactions. But I'll use me. I have this exact experience. Like, I know what this person's talking about specifically. And it was something, I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, Leslie. So
maybe not.
I'm, you know, dating, and now I'm engaged with, and I'm married to, and I've got black family, and we're hanging out and going together. And there's all sorts of like hilarious sort of like, you know, I'm super white and they're not. And like things are just like culturally different and kind of weird.
My favorite thing to do is to bring you into a room where you're the only white person. I love it.
Oh, but I'm good in that space. And I think I always have been, but I've been comfortable in my skin and not like worried. But nevertheless, the implicit bias this individual is talking about. It exists, and there are tests. You can go online and you can take a it's a Harvard test, and it's really kind of neat. It says, does like word and picture association. You've got to do things with your mouse and your computer keyboard, and it actually measures the like micro milliseconds between white and black associations, and it shows an implicit bias.
Really?
Yeah, and it's accurate as fuck. It really does. And so for me, this, you know, and I'll say that like the example typically of implicit bias is, you hear the word criminal and you instantly think black, right? So the criminal and black is just sort of in your mind. You know, that's what we've done over the last 30 years as a society.
More than 30 years.
Right. But it's the whole like, oh, I see.
400 years.
400 years.
The you see a black person and that like, you know, fight or flight reflex, like knee jerk, like, oh my God. So you can't not do that as a white person. To deny that that happens is fucking, it's crazy. You're stupid. I call it immediate bullshit. So like they're colorblind, like, oh, I'm not biased, like lies, right? Like fat up lies. I married a black one. I have black family. I had that shit. Okay. So what it took, right? What it took is what you think is what you say. What you say is what you do. What you do is who you are. So you change your thinking, and you have to change your thinking. And if you just change your thinking, it's going to take a long time. But if you change your thinking and change your speaking and change your doing and where you are and who you hang out with, it moves a little bit quicker. So for me, that implicit, you know, like anti-black bias, straight up, like the interaction with your family, the number of interactions and time, it was years, like 6-7 years before I would see someone not of our family, right? Because right away, like if I see any of my family, I don't have implicit bias.
Right.
I know your sister. I love your sister. I love my nephews. I'm not going to think anything a certain way. But let's say I see somebody who looks exactly like them but isn't them, right? Now, do I have that implicit bias? And it did. It took like 6-7 years. Of hanging out with family.
As I say all the time to you about that, like you're lucky in that regard of having such close proximity to black people that you love. But the thing is that most white people don't have that luxury, and not only that, but they shouldn't need it either, because that puts so much of it on interacting with black people. And like, you have me to kind of buffer you from any like fuck ass behavior, but like the average white person, nah, they're going to be doing so much damage to black people trying to like,
listen,
oh, let me hang out with you and have you listen, not make me listen. Racist anymore. Like, oh,
and also it also requires a lot of, patience mm-hmm. on the end of from the magical Negro school.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
So much.
Like, it requires patience from the black person, because, like, I've been in my fair share of interracial relationships, and, like, you know, sometimes I've been pleasantly surprised, and sometimes I've been, you know, very disappointed. Mm-hmm. And even in situations where I've been pleasantly surprised, I'm like, you kind of can't say that. I love you. You can't say that. Yep. And here's why. Mm-hmm. And then when they learn, they're like, oh, right. Okay, got you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to, like, I have cared about those people. And so I didn't want to cuss them out as soon as they said something wrong. Whereas, like, if I wasn't dating them, I would have taken off my invisible earrings and rolled my neck and put my invisible Vaseline on my edges so I could read them the fuck for filth.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's very hard, but the thing is, it takes work. It's mm-hmm. It's part of the fabric of our country, and it has been since its inception. So who the fuck are we to think that because a biracial man was elected president twice that all of a sudden implicit racial bias is gone? Like, that's just stupid.
Especially when he dealt with implicit bias against him while he was president. So
his whole presidency
is like, he's still dealing with racism right now. The shit that happened to him in office has never happened to a president ever. And the only difference was him being black. So just like we're going to see shit that Hillary will have to deal with that no president has ever had to deal with ever because she's a woman.
She has a vagina.
It's going to just be like that. So it definitely does. It does take work. I say that all the time. Like, the work is like, you have to actually get in there and fucking do it.
Listen, there's work for black folk. There's work, and for white folk. And Leslie, I've never shared this. I'm going to get like as real as I'm.
Listen, how many times you going to say that?
I know.
This
I'm going
to
get.
Reggie,
I'm going to get. I'm going to get uncomfortably real. I'm going to get uncomfortably real.
Is this marriage counseling?
I'm helping white people. I'm helping white people. I'm helping white people. Right. So you know what? You know,
magical white man.
You know, I'm a vociferous, staunch, you know, white people. You can't ever, white people can't ever utter that word. You know that epithet.
Wait, which word?
I'm not going to say it. The epithet that I cannot be spoken.
The letter after M?
Yes. So okay, white people can't say it, right? That's a taboo. It's forbidden. It's verboten. Just don't fucking think it. Not ends in A-E-R, period, nope. When Kanye be saying it, you're broke, right? Like, that's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Exactly.
Me, you have to do the radio version. This is me and my life I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I can't sit here and say I've never said the word, right? You know,
that's not new info.
I know. So you and I have been together a long time.
And here's the thing: every black person knows that white people say it.
Okay, but I'm gonna tell you.
We know y'all.
I'm gonna give you the secrets. I'm gonna spill the tea.
What's the tea?
So Leslie, I've never said it since you and I have been together. Sure. It's never uttered my lips and hasn't for a very long time. And I'll tell you exactly why. And I'll tell you how it doesn't and why it doesn't and why a lot of people still do. It has a, because it's got such weight and everyone knows it and it's got such power and pain and hurt, it's like the dirtiest of the dirty. Like, you know, like I'm going to say the word cunt. Like, I don't really like that word. It's kind of ugly.
It just doesn't sound good in the English dialect. Now, I have British friends who say it all the time.
Oh, they love that word. Yeah, but they mean like a jerk. Yeah, they mean like a jerk. Like you're being like a – it's not like a, yeah. Like we do. But anyway, that word isn't – that's like on a 1 to 10. That's like a 2. This other word's on like 100, right? So white people have that word as a like – it's there. It's in the fucking – it's in the filing cabinet. It's in the possibility of I'm so mad, motherfucking son of a cunt, fucking son of a – right? It can come out. So I'm in college. I'm maybe, I don't know. And I don't want to say the person's name because you know them, Leslie. We haven't seen them in a long time.
Oh, you do? I know this story.
Okay. So we have a black friend. And
just the one,
dude. I swear to God, one of my friends is black. Literally, swear to God.
He's been on the show. What's up?
No, that's not him.
Oh. I had
more than one black friend.
You did.
Well, at this time, Ennis was my roommate freshman year, and this is probably more like junior year, okay? Maybe late sophomore year. So I'm living off campus. We're at somebody else's apartment. And at this time, so the black woman, we went and visited before the Erykah Badu concert.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So
of course you went to an Erykah Badu concert in college.
No. Me and Leslie went to an Erykah.
No, we just went to
an
Erykah
Badu. We just went to an Erykah Badu concert.
Wait a minute.
And so I was saying that Leslie knows the black woman I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
So said black woman's at this apartment. We're hanging out. And another friend of ours, the friend who got married and lost the adopted son the next morning. You know who that is, Leslie?
Who is it?
The friend that got married and then the adopted son the next morning.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, where's
so-and-so? I already know the story, so tell it.
So we're watching I don't know what we're watching. Maybe it was like March Madness or something. But this white dude let it slip out. You know, like, bloop,
oh, no.
Here comes the N-bomb. But real casual, like, you know, like one of these like oh, that over there, this or there. And
no, he, not that one over there.
No, I mean, literally, it was ugly. It was ugly. It was fucking ugly. Mm-hmm. And so this black woman in a room full of white folk is there, and it's like you say, like it takes a lot of like you know I don't know what it took her, like steel resolve, emotional fucking, like, you know, she had to swallow something fucking unbelievable that day. And there just wasn't any amount of apologies, there wasn't any number of sorries. Something fundamentally changed.
Yeah,
it
because
just changed.
You don't
want,
let me tell you from the opposite side of that, when you hear somebody say it, what it says to you is that at any moment that you were in their presence, they were thinking of you like that. That's what it says to us. And you can't go back from that shit.
Yeah, there is no back.
There's no back.
There's no back. So
and also, I immediately, when I hear that word from a white person, I look around and see what everyone else's reaction is.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that if shit pops off, I know who's on my side or not. And I take a quick scan and I'm like,
okay.
Can we fuck shit up? Yeah. No? Okay.
Yeah, so I failed.
That's where you come in, though. Like,
that's
right.
One.
Yeah, so
Fuck you. You're cool. Fuck you. That's what you said.
Exactly.
I failed. My 20, you know, 3-year-old self did the like, oh my God, did that happen?
You did that, and you also looked to her to see what she was going to do. And that's the shitty thing that white people
do. I looked to her to see what she was going to do.
This is a good learning moment for white people.
And she did the like, it's okay. You know, I know you didn't mean it.
Because what is she going to do? Be uncomfortable with the two of you?
That was like more than just me.
Well, whoever. Yeah, she knew it's the only black person there.
Absolutely.
Right,
so
right.
What the fuck is she going to do?
So
be the asshole?
I would say for white people that want to, you know, like this isn't like, rocket science. We've been conditioned, indoctrinated. If you don't want that word to ever be possible, you can't ever fucking think it. You got to literally excise it from ever even being
Once
able.
Once it's situational, then it can come. That's what you're
saying. It has to be out of the filing cabinet.
Right, but the other way that you would say is, because people would say, look, I wouldn't say it in front of a black person.
Yes, that's my point.
Like, as if that's okay.
No, because if you can ever think it, or if you can ever say it in company and tell that Justin Bieber joke and giggle, if that's possible for you, then it's also possible when you're fucking triggered and fragile and something. And it just, so you got to not ever think it. It can't ever
and
be anywhere
PSA,
even possible.
Dear white people, cracker is not the same.
No.
Not even close.
It's not.
It's not. It's just. It's
no.
not.
Like, crackers,
let's
like
take that false equivalent.
More mild than douchebag.
At the filing cabinet too, baby. Yes.
You could change my Avi name to like cracker ass cracker for the next year, and I wouldn't give a shit, dude. Yeah. Like for real, dude. Cracker ass cracker guy. Cracker cracker cracker.
Speaking of cracker ass crackers, the Democratic Party had a leak this morning.
Oh my god.
We're spilling lots of tea today.
Oh, we got the tea today.
What's that? Well, I got to make sure we're cognizant of the other half that's not
I
on
have,
the show.
I have. Oh no, that's okay. The hacktivist blogger Guccifer 2.0 got this from Nancy Pelosi's PC. They hacked into her PC. And was originally sent on November 19th in 2015, so just last year, by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee's Troy Perry, who now works for Hillary Clinton's campaign. The memo describes Black Lives Matter as, quote, a radical movement to end, quote, anti-Black racism, and advises Democratic officials not to, quote, offer support for concrete policy positions. Let me repeat that again.
Oh,
he says
Nancy.
That not to offer support for concrete policy positions. So they have this whole memo, Black Lives Matter movement, internal use only. That's
of
the
course.
Memo lines, the memorandum. And it says this document shouldn't be emailed or handed to anyone outside of the building. Please only give campaign staff these best practices in meetings or over the phone. Oops.
Bloop.
Oops, guys. So they have a background. What does BLM want? That's the first thing this is his little cheat sheet. This is the cheat sheet, you guys, that the DNC has been passing around.
Pay attention, y'all.
Pay attention. It's
curious.
A radical movement to end, quote, anti-Black racism, end quote. Though police abuses are a central component, the founders view the movement more broadly. A second bullet point is criminal justice system reform, sentencing reform, ending prison, industrial complex, police reform, referring to hiring, training, and unfair policing tactics. And a third bullet point is an end to police brutality, the killings of unarmed African Americans, the impetus of the movement being the acquittal of George Zimmerman. And it has two other points under that, collect data on police shootings and demilitarization of the police. Then they talk about tactics. This is what they want the DNC and different people within the organization to do. This is how they want them to engage with the movement. Meet with local activists. If approached by a BLM activist, campaign staff should offer to meet with local activists. Invited BLM attendees should be limited.
Boy, that sounds a lot like, geez, I wonder who did that.
Please aim for personal or small group meetings. Other 3 points.
Wow.
Listen to their concerns. Don't offer support for concrete policy positions. And frontline district staff should meet with activists. Those are the 3 points under that.
I swear to God, is that like literally like the blueprint for the meeting that Hillary had with... I swear to God.
Let's keep it moving. Next point is provide a point person. Always provide a campaign contact person for BLM activists. It is important to let activists know the campaign wants to engage in an open dialogue.
So that's why Donald hired Omarosa.
You know what? You need to go.
Nope.
Omarosa's not the
that's
point.
That's it. I'm going to pull Reggie. That's it. The show's over. This has been the Interracial John. Good night.
Listen, you know Donald's behind the Russians that are doing this hacking.
Drew, this
Guccifer
is a Democratic
national. I know. I'm just saying, though, if Guccifer got it, Donald got it, too. He's been
Maybe
on.
So.
He's got to say, oh, I got to get a point contact.
And the next thing says, be a partner and lead from behind, you guys. It says BLM needs partners to achieve their agenda, and they want to be part of a conversation. However, BLM activists don't want their movement co-opted by the Democratic Party.
That is true.
They are leery of politicians who hijack their message to win campaigns.
That is true.
So that's the response.
I would say, aside from the instructions, right? Like the these are their demands, like in the bullet points. That was largely accurate. Mm-hmm. Like that was largely accurate. Yeah,
it was a very accurate snapshot of the movement.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect anything less. We've done nothing for the last 2 years except to find exactly what the fuck we're talking about, because all we hear, no matter how many times we fucking say it, is you guys don't have a plan. What do you even want?
Get a job.
Put them cameras on them, motherfuckers. And when you shoot us, you need more than a timeout and desk duty. Mm-hmm. The end.
Mm-hmm. They do go on to say a little bit more about messaging. This I thought was really funny. They say, this is a big point they make. They're doing their homework here. Do not say all lives matter, nor mention black on black crime.
That's a huge bullet point. Wow. Now, they actually were listening.
Now they go in a little bit deeper here, which I think is very telling. They say these are all viewed as red herring attacks. Now, not that they are red herring attacks, but they're viewed as them.
Why'd you have to read that? Didn't we almost have it
you
all?
You could just stop. You could have just stopped. Bullet point. Don't say all lives matter.
I want to know. The people want to know. Then they say this response will garner additional media scrutiny and only anger BLM activists. The final point under this is the worst response.
It really says that all lives matter is the worst response.
The worst response.
Yeah. I can't give it.
It's true. It really is.
It really is. I love it. I fucking love it. It's still largely correct. They got a lot of things accurate.
All right. The last piece of it says what to say to media/activists. It says many communities in America feel unfairly targeted by police, and it's an issue that requires addressing. Evidence from the DOJ Ferguson report. So if there's evidence that you don't need to say feel, you can just say that many communities in America are targeted by police, motherfuckers.
You could have said the DOJ report below.
Shows. Dumbasses.
Attached DOJ report.
But you know what? It's those subtleties of language that show you what they really think, because it's important. Those words matter.
Like anti-black police brutality in quotes is like, go fuck yourself.
Like, stop.
The equivocation, right? And we have another piece we're going to talk about from a journalistic standpoint, but I'm real tired. And I remember right after Mike Brown's death, I used the word extrajudicial execution. And oh, for fuck's sake, did a bunch of white... I lost white friends because it had the word execution. I was like, yo, it's linguistically correct. You don't know what happened.
You better come on with this vocabulary.
It doesn't matter. It really is. Whether it was the cop's fault or the assailant or victim's fault, it does not matter if you are killed outside of a court of law and jurisdiction.
It's an execution.
And it's an execution. Absolutely. And it's extrajudicial. And they got all pissed. They got literally pissed about the word execution.
You don't know what happened.
You don't know what it is.
Man.
I'm like, bitch, I didn't call it murder. I went out of my way not to use the word murder. And you still got all in my fucking feels about it?
But
Bye.
You know, that's because they don't want to feel guilty about a black body being murdered.
Of course.
So wait for the facts.
Using words other than like tragic death or like not even tragic, but like death.
Yeah.
Or
not even death.
Whatever.
Officer involved shooting is what they call it.
The language is so passive. Like officer did have gun and bullet might have left barrel and barrel may have been aimed in certain direction and projectile may have struck victim. Like really?
Right. They're like acting like it's like Barney Fife. Fucking, you know, Ray Lewis.
An officer discharged weapon did strike an individual. You mean he shot a motherfucker? Like
right.
Use some language. All right, sorry. Wow. Go on, Leslie.
Oh, this is the last part. This is what to say. It says, explore reforms to ensure officers are properly trained and don't, and this is again in quotes, infringe on citizens' rights. I don't know why that's in quotes. But whatever.
Wait, which part's the quotes?
The infringe on citizens' rights.
So not citizens, not rights, but the whole infringe.
The whole infringe, yeah. Mm. Hold police accountable to their actions when it's a clear case of wrongdoing.
Oh my god, versus a clear case like an illegal chokehold used on someone on camera.
Oh my god,
a clear case like a 12-year-old
can't breathe for 11 times in a row and
is
not giving
clear
relief. Get the fuck out of here.
Okay.
Rebuild the relationship between police and community, ensuring officers are not just in the community when something bad is happening. Or have them not there at all.
Yeah, that's my
That would be better. And then a history of systemic racism continues to confront the daily lives of African Americans. And the last point is the country.
Is that in quotes too?
No, that wasn't in quotes. That's facts, apparently. They finish strong. The country must look for ways to address this legacy and make sure African Americans feel they are treated with fairness and dignity.
Oh, not that they are. But we feel.
You're so close.
God damn it. And you know that, I do say it's largely correct, but they only like got a small little bit about going beyond police brutality into like larger white supremacy.
Beyond all of that, look, the biggest piece of this is them literally saying that they don't want to don't make any promises about policy. Yeah, because here's the thing. All we've heard for the last 2 years from the establishment and reform people in this movement, black people alike, we have heard, come to the table, sit down, bring your ideas, put policy forward, because they're willing to talk and work with us. Are they?
Right.
Are they, though?
They literally send an inter-office memo, don't talk about no policy.
Don't say no, don't make no commitments to nobody. What the fuck are we doing at a table with a group of people that literally have fundamentally decided they will not be doing any business here?
You know what's interesting?
Now, that is the Donald Trump meeting.
You know what's real interesting, Leslie? I keep threatening, but I had the pinned tweet on my profile on Twitter is a little bit of a like, you know, if you're attempting as a white person to go from fucking indoctrinated into anti-racist, here's a bit of a roadmap, right? Here's some things to do.
Mm-hmm.
What the DNC...
You're so helpful.
But no, listen, what that DNC internal memo did was like, it did that on a like really high end, like someone paid $100,000 to like, okay, here's how you can basically placate and lip service the vast majority.
Yeah, they were trying to give them the buzzwords to say and to not fuck up. That's what they were doing.
Do not say all lives matter and black on black crime. Yep. Period. Full stop. That's totally. The worst thing you can do.
Don't promise them anything because we ain't giving these niggas goddamn thing.
Meet with people, but be selective. Yep. Right? Pick the right people that have just the right amount of influence, but not enough. Have a small group so you can't be fucking overwhelmed.
Yep.
Or you can't be held accountable.
And you can't be held accountable.
Fucking A, man.
Anyways.
They literally wrote a memo on how to play
for Nancy Pelosi being Nancy Pelosi and how deep into the establishment she is, I'm going to give her a slow two claps and girl, you halfway tried that.
Mm.
Because, you know, a whole lot more of that could have been in quotes.
But then they tried to spin it today. Meredith Kelly, God, their national press secretary, said the DCCC highly respects and values the leadership of the Black Lives Matter movement. In less than 2 years, BLM has evolved from three words into a political force that is changing and waking our nation. At the DCCC, we highly encourage our candidates to not only embrace the importance of this movement, but to meet with and listen to community activists to partner social change. Mm-hmm. We will not allow this hacking to distract from our common goals, nor disparage the BLM movement.
Olivia Pope is busy, y'all.
We continue to welcome further engagement with activists and BLM leaders nationwide.
Mm. Olivia Pope is busy.
Listen, what's that woman's name? Judy, whatever her name is. Real Olivia Pope? She in this.
She in here deep.
Of course, you know, BLM was having none of it. I'll give you their quick quote. They said, we deserve to be heard, not handled. People are dying. We demand and are fighting every day for a radical transformation of American democracy where all black lives are valued. We expect that our elected officials will stop pacifying and take us seriously. So,
well done.
This
next piece you have in the news, I don't know if I understand why it's in here.
It's in here because I wanted to talk about Mercury being back in retrograde. Do you have anything what is this like for you? Because I don't know about you, Reggie, but we get like our entire world gets fucked. In fact, it started today, Drew. And what happened to you going to get pizza? Ask yourself that. Thank you very much. Reggie, do you get this bullshit?
I mean, so I've been friends with Nicole for almost 10 years and I never really thought about it before I met her. And, you know, like Nicole talks about it a lot. I'm like, what the fuck? This is the made up bullshit. But every time some shit be going crazy and I got a crazy ass email this morning. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that shit is real.
It's crazy. I look, we had problems with the already, especially the mechanical part of things. Like, I just feel like that part is, it happens. It's real. I don't know. I don't do my horoscopes or anything, but this fucking Mercury and retrograde shit is real.
This is, I went to it. This is me, right? This is my horoscope.
Yeah. What's it say?
The story of this world is not complete without my chapter added to it. No matter what my inner demons try to tell me, my work and my contribution to the world is essential to its unfolding. Each one of us holds a piece of this puzzle. Mine is no more and no less important than anyone else's. No matter the ways in which I tend to limit the reach of my work or feel limited by my own misunderstanding of my worth, my work in the world cannot be left undone. It is mine to do. It is my child, my love, my relationship, my offering. My way in and through this life. I am here to offer myself in service to the work that must be done through me. This isn't up for negotiation.
Boom.
Well, that sounds like somebody in your sign is trying to kill themselves.
That's a good Lord.
That's a lot.
That was like a very strongly anti-suicide horoscope. Like,
it's supposed to be one of these, like, how to thrive, you know, type of things.
I think it was a mantra, suggested affirmation.
Like, yeah, that goes,
you know, like
along
Stuart
with
Smalley, you are good. You are awesome. And damn it, people like you.
People like you.
People like you. Well, fuck Mercury in retrograde. I hope it ends quickly because I can't take
maybe,
it.
Maybe, because there isn't quite honestly much normal explanation for Maine's Governor LePage. Maybe,
well,
it's the retrograde.
You think it's retrograde? No, this motherfucker been a racist bastard since Jump Street. Trust. He'd been crazy walking around talking about Juju and BB that's been coming to Maine to do whatever. I don't even know.
Yeah, are we on the clock? We can't be more than an hour.
No, I know. We're going to
keep it tight.
Job,
that's
fine.
Keep it tight.
So, Maine Governor LePage this week took to... Well, you know, he's been already, we reported before about him saying that black people come up to Maine to sell drugs and impregnate white women.
And he had some really horrible names. Like, he made up, like, black ass names, like mm-hmm. blah, blah, comes up here mm-hmm. and has kids. Like, it was bad. It
so
was real bad.
This past week, he doubled down on those efforts, saying that he knows that it's true. And we've got to, you know, if you know that people with blue hair are doing such and such, you got to come after make sure you don't have any people with blue hair around you then. Like, literally, this is the governor, two-term governor of one of our states. But this week he took it to another level because one of his state representatives did not like those sentiments from their governor, thought that they were inappropriate. And the governor took this to heart and left this message on this person's voicemail. Here we go.
I would like to talk to you about your comments about my being a racist.
That's Maine Governor Paul LePage.
I like the time.
Drew Gattin, a state lawmaker LePage thought had called him racist. The governor did not hold back.
I want you to prove that I'm a racist. I've spent my life helping black people, and you little son of a socialist sucker, I need you to, this freaking, I want you to record this and make it public because I'm after you. Thank you.
And in a page right out of the 19th century, the governor later challenges Gattin to a duel.
Stop. How angry I am. And I bet, and I would put my gun in the air, guarantee you. I would not be Hamilton. I'd point it right between his eyes.
LePage is no stranger to controversy.
I was Donald Trump before Donald Trump became popular.
Something he himself acknowledged in his endorsement of Donald Trump earlier this year. But the parallels go further. An outsider riling up the establishment, a fighter willing to go to the mat with political foes. LePage's daughter even works for Trump's campaign.
Listen.
And yes, he's a politician with a history of not so politically correct comments. From strong words to President Obama.
And as your governor, you're going to be seeing a lot of me on the front page saying, Governor LePage tells Obama to go to hell.
To punctuating a dispute with the NAACP like this.
I'm going to kiss my butt.
And recently, on the father of a Muslim American soldier killed in action in Iraq.
Then there's the mighty powerful one, like Mr. Khan, which is a con artist himself. And he uses the death of his son, who's an American soldier, which we respect and honor, and he uses that to go after Trump, which I found very distasteful.
but it's comments related to the state's heroin crisis that have followed LePage for months.
These are guys of the name D-Money, Smoothie, Shifty, these type of guys. They come from Connecticut, New York. They come up here, they sell their heroin, then they go back home. Incidentally, half the time they impregnate a young white girl before they leave, which is a real sad thing, because then we have another issue that we got to deal with down the road.
Whoa.
You guys.
Yeah, that's LePage. Real great.
Another issue you have to deal with down the road?
Yep.
I love, too, that – so first of all, that was like months ago. That was like last year.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like D-Money comes up here selling heroin and pregnant. Right? That was a year ago, right? The voicemail like a week and a half ago, prove I'm racist. I want you to prove I'm racist. Your news conference
from 6 months ago or yesterday?
Wow.
I want you to prove I'm racist.
The best thing is that he hasn't, the guy Gatine never called him a racist at all. He literally wasn't him. It was somebody else. And,
but that's my favorite thing about white people. They get like, so like you say that something they said is problematic and they make the jump to you calling them a racist. Like, yes. I didn't call you that.
I didn't even say that, but okay, whatever. Yeah, so of course people are like, you just threatened this guy. He's a lawmaker in your state. Like, what the fuck is going on? And of course, now he says, obviously it's illegal today. It was simply a metaphor. I meant no physical harm. My dude, you said that I wouldn't do that. I would shoot him directly between his eyes. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, seriously, like you forgot what you said? Like,
I didn't mean no physical harm. I meant to say that I was going to shoot him between his eyes, but that wasn't physical harm.
Wow.
I don't know what to say. We have a lamentable update. I don't know, Reggie, if you remember.
Let's talk about the update. What's that phrase about your one's right to swing your arms freely ends at the other person's nose? I feel like there's something there with like LePage. Like, your right to say you mean no harm ends at quoting you're going to shoot someone between the
eyes.
Yeah,
I think you don't have that. You don't have that right to stand on anymore.
No more.
Yeah, you're done. You're done for. So if you guys remember the white Ohio mom, a lesbian mom who got impregnated with a sperm of a black man accidentally. So she's back in the news. Jennifer Gramblett, she's suing the fertility clinic again because of, quote, pain, suffering, and emotional distress attached to raising a non-white baby.
Wait, again?
Yes, she's suing again.
Wait, what for this time?
The same thing, I think. So she,
isn't that like double jeopardy?
I guess. I think the new suit argues that the fertility clinic should pay over $150,000 in damage for their neglect. It claims since a doctor misidentified a donor number in written hand and caused a mix-up, and that they should pay them for the struggles of raising a mixed child.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when we first talked about it, there was some like a little bit of like, you know, maybe, just maybe, this, whether it's fuck-ass or not, could be a legal precedent for like there being like, you know, like a black tax. Like her lawsuit at one point was, there are no black hairdressers. You know, it's going to cost me more to raise this child in a like rural white community. And that might have been like, you know, I guess from a like,
Sophie, his
13th, I don't
want to
say like precedent.
We'll,
hello, is that me?
Sorry, it's me.
That might have been interesting, I guess, on a precedent, mm-hmm. as gross as that maybe sounds or feels. But I didn't think I felt that way for very long. And the more I heard from the mom and now the second lawsuit, the less I feel like, I don't know. I feel less and less, I don't know what about it, but like, come on. Just raise your child, please.
I don't know.
Right, like, raise your kid, damn it.
Right. I'm of two feelings of this. One is that, you know, there's a lamentable reality that she was wronged. Okay. This was an actual mistake that somebody she paid for services from messed up. I mean, there's no more clear cut. They literally wrote the wrong number down in their handwriting. Like, they read it wrong. So they right. made a mis- they made an actual mistake. It wasn't like, you know, something, like, it wasn't a force de majeure. Like, an actual person made an error and it caused the situation. Okay. So that's the
it
one
wasn't
thing.
Like Jane the Virgin.
Right. It wasn't like Jane the Virgin. Exactly. So, you know what I'm saying? So to me, that there's that level of it. And I feel like that should have been the crux of the lawsuit, really, was that they made a mistake and they shouldn't be able to make a mistake. She didn't get what she paid for, and leave the race part out of it, because I'm sure she picked whatever sperm donor she picked, not just because of their race, but because of lots of things. And so,
because of their stats,
right,
their health history,
all sorts of things that there would have been a reason
paradoxically,
to choose that person.
I agree with you, but paradoxically, without it being a different race, there's a 99.999% chance they never would have known this mistake happened. If this mistake had happened with another white donor, they probably wouldn't have known.
Of course. I don't think that's an argument you can make in court.
I know that's not an argument you've already made. I'm saying that feels weird. I get you. I hear what you're saying, that it was a mistake, but the only reason you really know about it is because it involves race. So how do you untwine race from this mistake having been made?
I don't know how you do it. I think it's unfortunate that obviously this situation happened, especially for the little girl, because I'm only, just because of how social media is and how the digital age is, I can just imagine her at like 12, like coming up on these stories and like reading them and these think pieces. And like, to me, that's where my mind automatically goes. And I just think it's so unfortunate that she's going to have to like at some point have a conversation with her mom. Like, did you not want me because I'm black? Like, what the fuck is
right.
How would you
course.
Not? How would you not feel that?
Because the internet lives forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever. So I always go to that. I was very, and I continue to be interested in this pitch of blackness as a disability, because that's really what she's talking about. She's trying to make a parallel between, let's say, you sue your OB for something that happened during delivery that led to a birth defect that you now have to deal with the rest of your child's life.
Your tubes and machinery and expenses.
It can be even something small. It can be now they have a speech impediment, or they have a developmental issue. It doesn't have to be that dramatic. But if something they did in the OR led to this, you get to sue them. They have insurance for those things, et cetera, et cetera. So it's interesting to see her try and make this parallel, because you would essentially, if they would win, you'd have a court admit that in this country, being black is the same as having a disability. It's very interesting.
That is interesting.
I don't agree with it, but it's very interesting. I mean, inherent in that is how
it is a fascinating legal precedent.
It really is.
Sure.
It's really interesting to me. I mean, she also needs to just go raise her baby, but I find it interesting.
And
I'm sure lawyers do too.
I'd love for, if there's a genre, I'd be intrigued, because we've got Khadijah's a rocket scientist.
Absolutely.
We've got
Elizabeth. We got Six Finger Tim.
We got some lawyers
out here.
I'm curious. I don't know, but something feels maybe like the indemnity insurance that's normally carried by a fertility clinic.
Yeah, they don't have that provision in there.
Not just do they not have that provision, there's like a ceiling. There's some kind of limit, and something's there, and something about their insurance carrier and this case and the lawsuit, there's something there.
Maybe.
Because this is new territory. Mm-hmm. No one ever had the like how much you got to carry for the like accidentally black. Accidentally black
have that
insurance.
Extra carriage. Let me ask my mom.
How much are the premiums for accidentally black?
I'm
going to
ask my mom if there's an accidentally black clause.
Was that the accidentally racist song that?
Not that.
I'm loathe to suggest that may have to be a possible title of this episode.
What?
Accidentally black.
Someone's going to go to that. They're going to literally be like, Interracial John had an episode called Accidentally Black. What the fuck is that? These people are crazy. Accidentally Black? Accidentally Black?
Well, I wrote it down. How about that? The next catch up, I think, is about, oh Lord, I can't believe he's back in the news again, but fake doctor from Florida.
You better get your money.
Malachi Love Robinson. He's been arrested again. He faces new felony larceny charges between $20,000 and fraud.
Listen, the first time he got arrested, he was like doing like gynecological like probes and shit, dude. Like he was doing shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I remember when we talked about it the first time, and I don't know if we had a guest on the show. I think we did. And I think the guest might have even been of the opinion that like this person is a sociopath, like this is a psychological issue this individual has. The way, remember his interview with the TV station, he just was like, there's a, you know, when someone's done like something really like unbelievably crazy. And then you talk to them, and they're calm as fuck. Like, they've got no compunction. They're like, yeah, I'm a doctor. I don't know why you're putting me in handcuffs and walking me out here. This is really unbelievable. I'll be vindicated in court. Like, dude, you're like 17. Like, what are you talking about? Like, he was so convinced, just like utterly convinced. And that conviction is why he's here again.
Yeah. And his lawyer has left him, though. He asked to be released.
I know it's ableist, and I know people don't like the word crazy, but whatever this individual's diagnosis is, the lawyer's got the DSM-4R. It's like, nah, I'm out.
Well, the lawyer earlier last month had filed a document saying they're exploring the viability of a defense focused on limitations presented by the defendant's mental health.
Yeah.
I think he's really detached from reality. Actually.
No, he's got to be. I'm telling you.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
He's completely.
He literally opened up a practice, had like fucking like a receptionist and was seeing patients.
But you know what that whole story told me?
He had a receptionist?
Oh, yes! He had an office.
He had a fucking practice.
It was legit. He had a whole practice.
He was seeing people.
And he had infiltrated a bunch of these mega churches, Reggie.
Were they volunteering?
No. See,
he set it all up. He was getting insurance payments.
Yeah,
honestly,
he positioned himself
as a holistic, new kind of
almost imagine a, you know, the dudes that do psychic surgery in the 80s where they like pull out like fake chicken guts from your stomach and shit with their bare hands. Remember people who do that shit?
Oh, Lord, Jesus.
You know, you don't know about this?
I remember that stuff, yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right, so he wasn't doing that, okay? That was then.
No, he was just sticking his hand in women's vaginas.
Imagine a modern version. Like, you're not going to pull chicken guts from somebody now. That's like, okay, you're crazy with the bare hands. So you have some other, like, I'm a healer, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm this, I'm this, and I'm a, you know, all these things. And then you just fucking give them pills from like GNC and you fucking finger bang them and shit and get fucking Medicare payments. I'm not even kidding.
That's terrible, but just the way that you said that.
So that's another show title, Finger Banging for Medicaid.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
Lord help us.
I can't believe I'm writing that down. You know what? My mother did
That's
not.
That's love. That's
my
love.
My mother did not send me
That's
to college
love right
for this.
There.
Let me tell you that.
My mom did not. I did not go to Medill Journalism School for this. God damn it.
Oh, gosh. So this week in hashtags, my first one.
Yes.
We already did the first one, which was veterans for Kaepernick. But the second one I had was Stop Racism at Pretoria Girls High, which is centered on a protest at Pretoria Girls High in South Africa, where they had this incredibly racist rule that you could not have an afro and wear it natural at their school. They were legit forcing black girls in South Africa to relax their hair. It was not considered neat and tidy, and while it wasn't specifically written in the rules, that's what they did. And so the girls all wore their afros all the fucking way out.
There are 2 billion people.
All the way
out. There sure are.
All the way out and had a big protest, and it was unbelievable. These kids, honestly, I don't even know what to say about it.
How do you have a fucking non-natural hair policy in fucking a country that's 70% black?
Anti-blackness is so pervasive.
It's everywhere. There ain't no limit to it at all. I think I have a video of the girl.
You can arrest us. You arrest us. You arrest us.
So they're fighting. They're discouraged from speaking their native languages and from wearing their hair naturally at school.
The system did not allow for black girls to have afros. It wasn't written in the code of conduct, but they tell you that your hair is very untidy and it's not appropriate with the school uniform. If your hair is neatly tied and your afro is neatly tied, why must you be apologetic for being a black African child in South Africa? Why do black girls always receive the shortest end of the stick?
Whew. So there's a petition now. People are
signing
it.
Yes, ma'am.
These girls ain't playing. And of course. Yeah. And one little girl, she's 13 years old, Zakira. I don't even know what to say. Like, her picture has been everywhere. Standing in front of these white men with her hands in the air. She was the one saying, arrest us, arrest us. It's just really beautiful to see them.
Love.
And the government education minister in South Africa has stood in solidarity with them and says he is all for what they're fighting for. Obviously, you know, the school gets to decide what it's going to do. But late breaking news here on the John. The South African school suspends its racist hair policy as a result of the protests of these women and the amplification nationwide. The school,
that's great.
South African school has been ordered to suspend hairstyle regulations that many say are racist. Al Jazeera reports that Pretoria High School for Girls was given 21 days to reassess its rules pertaining to black people's hair. According to reports, students of color at the school say they've been called monkeys by teachers for wearing band afros or were forced to chemically straighten their hair. Learners feel they were not allowed to wear black hairstyles such as the afro. Specifically, the school policy limits the length of the hairstyle, the ministry, education ministry said in a statement. And the ministry said the school's code of conduct must be reviewed and the clause dealing with hairstyles should be suspended in the meantime. So,
it's very exciting. Right. Good for them. Good news.
Good news out here in these streets. So, good for them. I'll tell you what. These young kids are not playing. And I actually saw this other story about...
Sidebar. I will never for the life of me understand the fucking fixation with black hair. It just, it's...
Because it's magical.
But Reggie, it's like there's other things that we white people do that are really like fuck ass and like ridiculous, but it's like, okay, I see where that has come from over time. This thing with the hair and like, I guess it's controlling and wanting to control, but just this whole hair fascination is fucking...
Then y'all be trying to copy our shit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Move on. Sorry.
So I just along the topic of these young people, I say this all the time. Like, I gladly take my direction from young people all the time. And when I say young, I mean under 25, preferably as young people in this movement anyways. And so I've just found this like most young portion of the movement and black children in particular. They're so fucking woke. Have you seen this, Reggie? It's disturbing how woke they are.
Like, yeah, they don't play.
They do not play. So a young woman was asked at Buckeye High School, not asked, forced to take off her Black Lives Matter shirt she had worn to school. Her vice principal, handed her a plain white T-shirt to change into after telling her that she wasn't allowed to wear her BLM shirt because she had previously argued with a young Caucasian boy who said black lives don't matter and, quote, that shirt is meaningless.
Mm-hmm. So wow. She had to, so the white boy's cool. He's fucking no problem, mm-hmm. But she got to take that shirt off.
She said she had also seen another student wearing a Confederate flag T-shirt and nobody said anything.
Of course.
At this point, I'm starting to believe there's a problem with the word black. It must be since they don't teach us about black people in school or tell me that I'm standing by my... that me standing up for my people against police brutality is disrupting in a learning environment. So, of course, students immediately staged a walkout. And
yes,
more than 1,000 people had shared the post. And so she's a 10th grade student and they were like, fuck this shit. And they walked out of school, joined by their parents, a diversity consultant, and her local pastor, who said that there was systemic racism at the school and they are...
I love her framing. I'm starting to think the problem is the word black because they don't teach me about nothing about black.
She ain't playing.
Yes.
She ain't playing. And of course, lastly, we don't really need to go into this too much, but I will say that Beyonce breaks the VMAs. It's the last hashtag for this week. And let me tell you something. Reggie, you've seen it, I'm sure.
Of course I did, including Serena Williams coming out, showing all her leg, and the intro calling her one of the greatest athletes of all time.
Look, no, that needs to be.
Made me so happy.
Needs to be, right?
I actually started tweeting an entire Twitter thread last night about this because I went back and watched it a second time and didn't realize, like, oh, wait, I actually need to watch this, like, 100 times because that's how fucking good it is. Because I don't think people...
It's amazing.
I don't think people even, like, really, truly, like, understand what actually happened on the stage. Like,
I mean, she basically gave another Super Bowl performance. Britney Spears, who had to go after her. Like, I'm like, actually, y'all, I'm not going.
Bad. She set up every single camera shot. She changed 4 fucking times. She had multiple very intricate visual effects. Her choreo incorporated camera angles and interplay. So she used close-ups. She smashed one of the cameras at one point, and it turned around to then show her walking, her ass, and her dropping that motherfucking bat. Let me tell you something. Your fave has never, ever, ever in
hope
in their life thought, dreamed, even come up with a wisp of an idea like some shit like this. She then
never hope.
Create an all new arrangement for all them motherfucking songs. And don't think I didn't notice. She sped up some parts. She added some extra ad libs. The whole thing was redone. She had some extra shit.
Then when she mixed in
a countdown, come on.
Like throwback in Hold Up, like get out of here.
Nah, get out of here.
Your fave doesn't even have that many hits.
Nope.
Like her concert is a greatest hits album.
Literally. And then
she has too many hits.
Then she released that shit as a live album the next day. Listen.
She was prepared. You said about
and I'm not even going to get into the fact that she literally on live TV said she would bounce to the next dick boy. She said that shit on live television.
I thought it was fat ass bouncing.
Yeah. Let me tell you.
But literally with Britney following her, two things. One, I feel like MTV's just trying to kill her. Like
Britney? Really,
yeah. Like they let her lip sync. Not just go up, but lip sync. Right after Beyonce. And I tweeted something, and I think I said that her team hates her because they let her going up looking like a Walmart banana coming after Beyonce. And I felt so bad. It got retweeted like a bunch of times. And like,
yeah, of course it did.
Because people was like making fun. But she's making that good money in Vegas.
She is, but she needs to just stay in Vegas then. Like, don't come back on live TV like that. Stay in Vegas.
Well, who is it before? Celine Dion?
Yeah.
She didn't be going on Grammys. She stayed in Vegas.
Celine Dion can. She just stands there and she got the pipes. But we talking about Britney here. Britney's entire, like, the reason why she became a superstar was not because of her vocals. So when we're at this stage in your career, Ma, let's not do it. Don't.
Yeah, I would have been like, I think the hypothesis is she may have like borderline personality or something. Mm-hmm. And I would have done one of those like DMX things, like just not showed up. Like, nope, see ya. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I saw Beyonce from the green room. I'm out. Like,
right.
I'm not following that. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to talk about the VMAs because I just don't give two rats Leaps. Fucking
it was
ass
terrible.
About them.
It was horrible.
Neither did anybody else watch.
Key and Peele are generally
don't talk about them. They're terrible
on
too.
Occasion, every once in a while, like sometimes funny. But
that was nearly unwatchable.
No, what was that? It was unwatchable.
What was that? And they didn't break it. They kept those characters the whole time. TTT. That's the tweet. That's the tweet.
And my thing was this is like they were trying to make fun of people that tweet about shit, and it was like that's the people you want watching your show. And so at some point it becomes like insulting to your target audience that you built your entire hosting gig around making fun of them. I don't even understand how it made any sense like in the writer's room. And that's my problem with the whole fucking thing.
But was there a writer's room? It looked ad-libbed. It was weird.
So they must have been in a room at some point, hopefully.
It was all bad.
It was so bad.
Rihanna, Beyonce.
Hashtag, why did you do that?
I swear for God, I thought that nigga Drake was going to propose though. I'm sorry. I really was like,
you did?
Look, first of all, he didn't even show up for his own award.
Stop.
But he had time to show up in a tuxedo to give her award. Talking about in a room,
they said he was
in a room where not just one, but two of his ex-girlfriends are present, had the nerve to say that he'd been in love with her since he was 22. Listen.
That's true.
You know what, though? All people do that. Brad Pitt did that when he was talking about fucking, I just finally found the love of my life, and it's so
That's
great.
That's one
blah,
thing
blah,
to
blah.
Say you finally found somebody, but this dude is talking about two women are in the room that he was romantically involved with, probably even more than that, but two we know about, sitting there watching him say that while he was in a relationship with them, in reality, he was in love with this woman right here. You
to be
kept,
fair,
say
when,
that, and,
as,
say that.
Because the U.S. Open was starting, Serena Williams left right after.
Oh, she left?
Beyonce.
Okay, so hopefully she didn't have to hear it. I'm sure she heard about it after the fact.
Wow. Yeah.
And you could say that to her. We don't need to hear it, Drake. We don't.
Right.
We don't need to hear it. Keep that to yourself.
I'm here, yeah, but.
Uh-oh.
Ooh. Yeah. Hey. I really don't.
I'm not a player. I just tweet a lot. That Twitter game came across probably one of the best things I've ever seen on Twitter in my life.
This definitely, if there's in 100 years, mm-hmm. this platform is still around.
Yeah.
I am going to say this will be.
Yeah.
In the top,
the 100, annals.
top whatever moments.
The annals,
absolutely.
So there's a kid, Shake Indicut is his handle. He posted a picture of himself, a selfie, and juxtaposition with a picture of Chad Ochocinco Johnson, and says, nah, fam, I need my 20 years of back pay on child support at Ocho Cinco. Ocho Cinco decides to reply, you might be my son. What's your mama name?
Wow.
The young man replies, Tasha Jackson. Again, this is all on Twitter, folks. Chad replies again, Tasha Jackson with the birthmark on her left hand?
Wow.
The young man replies, I don't want to know how you know about her birthmark, but bingo.
Wow.
And finally, Chad replies, just tweets out, found my son on Twitter. God is good.
Oh, God. Oh, like there was God.
Why are we like this, Reggie? Why? Why are we like this? Why? Oh, my God. God is good, you guys. Chad found God his good. Found his son. But Tasha Jackson with the birthmark on her left hand? Mm-mm.
I don't know how you know about that, but bullseye.
That's just wow. People, it's too much. This is going to make me leave the internet altogether.
It's too much. It's too much. It's too much.
It's much too much.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about this black bank.
I'm sorry. I'm still tripping. Like, I honestly, like, the young man kind of thought it was a joke. Like,
he just thought he looked like
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he's tweeting like, nah, fam, I need my 20 years back pay of child support. Ocho Cinco. Like a joke. Like, he made like a joke. Like, I look like this motherfucker like a lot. And he really right. replied like, you might be my son. Like, literally, like, he was like, look, I'm going to make this joke. I got like 200 followers. I look like Ocho Cinco. And he writes back like, you might be. Like,
you might be. I want to know how he saw that. Or Megan, maybe just he's really in his mentions.
He probably was one of the people that searches his name.
He probably clearly. Well, he tagged him, but like as a joke. But you know,
he literally out. Like
have mercy.
He tweeted, "You might be what's your mama name with the bird."
Like, like you're that much of a hoe that you actually don't know how many children you've created. Like something is wrong,
I please don't need to write in and correct me. And I'm not trying to be like anti nothing, but it is like I swear like 11 or 12 kids. It's a lot.
It's right? a whole bunch. It's a whole bunch. So I know Drew, you wanted to. Reggie's gonna be leaving us. He's only had a few minutes left, but I know you wanted to really talk about this white fragility video or something.
Yeah. So we're gonna do our white people business when you're not. We don't need to bother you with it with Reggie.
Yeah. I literally was I feel like it's so funny. I was just having I participated in a very heated argument about reparations the other day
with
three other white people, and I was the only non-white person. Woo. So I feel like that is the perfect time for us to have this discussion.
Yes. Heavy. Well, so this if people haven't seen it, it's terrific. I think it was 8A Plus was the Twitter account, but it's News Broke is a group of people, and they made a 80s style workplace training video on white fragility. That's like, you know, tongue-in-cheek sarcastic, but I'll just let it play.
Okay. Hey Jen, I really like your hair.
Thanks, Becky.
I think the curls
her name is Becky.
Yeah, of course it is.
I love it.
Look, your fame could never have this wide of an influence. Could never.
Never.
Oh Lord.
Hello.
Can you not do that? It's kind of inappropriate.
She went to touch her
what?
Hair.
Why? Well, it's kind of racist.
You're probably wondering what went wrong in this workplace interaction between Becky and Jen. Unless you have a keen understanding of racial discrimination in today's workforce, you probably didn't notice that something very offensive has taken place. Jen called Becky the R-word, causing Becky to feel shame and sadness. How can we avoid situations like this?
White fragility training, raising racial awareness of white discomfort.
Workplace discrimination is a very serious issue, and we have to be sensitive to our employees' different ethnic and cultural backgrounds. Oh, no. And just as it's important to be sensitive to our black, Arab, and other non-white coworkers, it's also equally important to be sensitive to our white coworkers' sensitivity to that sensitivity.
This is amazing.
They have Tom and Marco
now. Can you believe
now?
That Trump wants to build the wall? I mean, I must really bother you as a Mexican.
Actually, I am Bolivian.
How dare you? I went to Berkeley.
Sometimes racial discrimination in the workplace can happen unintentionally. Take, for instance, this scene where Marco accidentally angered Tom by correcting him. Marco may not be Mexican, but correcting Tom in that manner made Tom confused, scared, and hostile. This situation could have been avoided altogether. Let's see how.
Can you believe Trump wants to build a wall? I mean, that must really bother you as a Mexican.
Yeah.
I love Mexicans. They're so hardworking.
Yeah, they, I mean, yes, we are. We are great.
Viva la Mexico!
Go! Crisis averted.
Oh my God.
Every day we learn more about how people of color live with histories of oppression. And every day we forget about those who also live with those histories.
Oh no.
The oppressors. Oh, you see, the average person of color has spent years developing a thick skin when it comes to systemic racial oppression, while the average white person can go through many of their formative years without ever having to think about race. So hearing about racism can be traumatic for your white coworkers.
Oh my God.
And create
listen how they had a graphic. They had an infographic with a person of color and then a white person. And the person of color, when they said, has to live their whole life with racial discomfort, was being pelted by like giant fucking like balls, like these little like graphical balls, like huge little things. One tiny little ball bounces off the person of color and hits the white person and he crumbles.
Oh my God, like that game, that
Pong
arcade
or
game.
Whatever.
The thing
yeah,
off the
yeah,
but
yeah.
Sweet Jesus.
Wasn't it you literally on this show were saying that, like, you know, as a black person, that like sometimes it's like, you know, you got to take that like horse shit to, you got to like unfortunately suck it up and be like, yeah, okay, just like you have to make a decision, like, am I gonna, is this the hill I climbed today,
right,
at work?
Yeah, right. But see, that's the problem, is like we all get to a point where we have no more fucks to give, and when that happens, like, it's bad, because
everybody watch out, like everybody watch out,
just don't come near me, don't talk to me, like just don't come to me with any fuckery, because I don't have any, like,
listen,
I don't have room for your fragility, listen, and your feelings.
I'll just say this, okay, I know you, Leslie, and I always talk about this line in the sand that you have.
Yeah.
And I think you generally say and you put forward a front like you've given up fuck, you don't give a fuck, you don't give a fuck. But when all the fucks are really gone, I'm going to run. I won't be around.
Well,
that's a real smart decision.
I have some stored up fucks for you, Drew.
I know. You
pun intended.
Dr. Jenny are going to keep me in the rice patties.
Yeah, exactly. But Reggie, I want to hear more about your conversation before you go about
and we'll put the link
so
to this training
it,
video.
It was
up.
Very fascinating because this person was trying to argue, and I'm very fortunate that I was not the only person like arguing my position, because again, it's just like when someone white says the N-word, you like look around and you're like, what's the breakdown in the room? Can I really do this? Am I going to ruin friendships? Am I going to break up marriages? We good? Okay, let's do it. So I could dig in a little bit. And this person was trying to argue that America was built. He was arguing correctly that America was built on the backs of the oppressed. But what he was conveniently leaving out is that, like, the America's shining capitalism is literally because of hundreds of years of unpaid slave labor by black people.
Absolutely.
And he was just saying, like, well, if they ever figured out how to give black people reparations, then what about the Native Americans or the Hawaiians or the Mexicans and everybody else? And like, it would bankrupt our government. And I was like, baby, let me tell you all the ways that that's not black people's problem.
So yeah, many ways.
You know, and really what I think.
So many ways.
So all of
so
the ways.
So many ways.
Every single way. Every way you could think of.
I don't
that
know how
way
to articulate it effectively that white people can like understand it. And I don't know if even I'm going to say it correctly here, but like, and other people are saying this. This isn't my words. These are multiple black authors that say these same things. But like the economic engine of capitalism was slavery. You know, when they talk about,
yes,
like they talk about the Industrial Revolution, talking about cotton and slavery, right?
Don't so, say was because yeah, like really, like we can look at something as short in time as the Gila cell and see,
sure,
we have Merck,
sure, sure,
we have
sure,
all
sure
of these huge pharmaceutical companies that continue
profit
to make money
of,
and profit off
of
a black woman's
absolutely
body. So fuck all of this,
yeah,
like, oh, back in the day,
but
bullshit.
But nevertheless, what this person was arguing, and they didn't quite bring it fully together, is that like the current global domination that the country that is the United States of America enjoys was because of slavery. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Like Eli Whitney, that invention wouldn't have been shit if they didn't have hundreds of thousands of people to work that shit from sunup to sundown for free.
I don't think Eli Whitney, I say this on the show all the time, I don't think Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin.
Child, he probably didn't.
I guarantee you he didn't, because what the fuck does he care how long it takes them to pick cotton? Who is incentivized physically and personally to actually make this more efficient? It ain't him. I can tell you that.
Side eye. Say that one more time.
Side eye. Yeah.
And then you hear that all the time.
And all the other, all the hundreds and millions of other inventions. What white people have invented? Patent lawyers. That's what they fucking invented. If you want to know the truth of it.
For real, dude. For real.
I want that on a t-shirt, and I'm going to wear that every day in the month of February.
Actually, I've heard argued that is the single greatest American invention is the Patent and Trademark Office and the ability to enforce that. Worldwide.
That's brilliant. Yes,
and who would do that? Oh, people that steal people's ideas. That's who does that shit.
Oh, my God. There's a great... I have to find it.
Shore it up.
No, there's a
it's fucking, mine. A it's sick, mine. Who in our society is obsessed with claiming shit?
Baby, listen. If you've got time, Reggie, I don't want to make the individual waiting for you mad, but there's a great article that shows lockstep, date and date, dollar for dollar, the Disney company spending lobbying money to change the copyright law to extend indefinitely the Disney copyright on characters like Mickey Mouse and Pluto and all this shit.
Yeah, because by now
the return on investment is unbelievable.
If it was like literature, Shakespeare is a great example. Like there's no trademark there anymore.
Yep. Correct.
And they didn't want to be on that.
Correct.
Train.
And they did a couple things differently, but they kept spending money to get extensions, and it went from like 20 years to 50 years to 99 years. And then now that it's extended, at some point, even if it were to run out, and they keep spending money to extend it, even when it does run out, they've had so many successful brand comparisons that Mickey is iconically associated with Disney the brand, that he's trademarked forever. So even if the patent on, like, you could draw Mickey, you could make a Mickey movie, you'd be able to, as a brand ambassador to Disney, because everything's got Mickey Mouse fucking on it, the ears, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? Like, they've done their homework. But it's crazy. You can see it. Like, they spend no money lobbying. 0000. 5 years before the 20-year period runs out, they start spending $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, $12 million, $15 million. Oh, there's an extension on the patent for 20 more years. They spend nothing, 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 nothing. 5 more years before that runs out, they spend $20 million. And then another 20-year extension.
Yeah, it's shady. For as sure. Fuck. Super, super shady.
Shady as
wow.
Super shady.
So do we have to bid you adieu?
Yeah, so please tell everyone where they can follow you and where they can follow the show. And please make sure that you subscribe and listen to us at T. It's one of our favorite podcasts. We listen to it together in the office every week, like Tuesday mornings. Drew's like, is it up yet? Because...
Yeah, listen, I don't want to...
So sweet. That listen, makes us feel so listen, special because we do not have a guest form. We are so damn unprofessional, child. We be talking. Sometimes I forget that we're like recording a podcast for people to listen to. It's because, like, you know, honestly, and this is the thing that everyone says they love so much about me and Nicole and our show is that the chemistry is palpable. It's like, well, it really is two best friends talking, and we don't live around each other, so we're so excited to talk to each other. So that's why there's so much energy, and we understand each other so deeply. So it's my favorite thing to do, and I get so scared because I used to like hate the sound of my voice, and I actually stopped listening to our podcast like years ago because I'm like, ooh, I hate the way that sounds. But like, it's my favorite thing about podcasting that I have a guaranteed excuse to spend hours on the phone with my best friend every week. So that's awesome. I'm glad you guys like it. All that to say, we are What's the Tea. We are on Twitter at Good Day Saints, which is it's a very long inside joke that you'll have to listen to all of our episodes to find out. So, haha. I'm on Twitter at R2TheEdgy, R2TheEdgy. And Nick Jew is on Twitter at Nick Jew. The hashtag of the show is #DatT, although it's changing very soon. Very soon. New changes to the hashtag. And you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic. And I'm so I so had such a good time. I can't wait to be back. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks for coming. And thank your thank the individual waiting for you for giving us your time. We appreciate it.
I will extend him your gracious thanks.
Yes. And Leslie's not lying. You guys, we love your show. And she said at one point that when you two were on, it was one of our favorite episodes to record and do. And you were dead on. Your chemistry is more than palpable. So folks, if you haven't, if you listen to our show and you think like, oh, Leslie and Drew, you got such great chemistry, Nick and Reggie blow us away.
We ain't got shit on them.
They're like a 200-year-old married couple. I fucking love listening to them.
I always say it's like if Oprah and Gail had a podcast, like this would be it. It would be like,
oh my God, y'all, that's amazing.
That's why people ask me, what's it like?
I did not forget about the So Gone Challenge. The next time I'm on.
Next time, we're going to do it.
Get my little 16 together.
Me.
Listen, I also want to say, was she really freestyling though?
That was good.
I think it was really good.
I'm impressed. I can tell you that.
I clearly was.
Leslie had
laughed, and I was like, I don't know what to say anymore.
Leslie had on our notes, you know, to do it, and like in my mind, I'm thinking like, I'm gonna get up and be like,
hype man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's love. But you have to be careful about those
ones.
They might sound a little left.
I'm just saying I couldn't do anything. I would just like the first thing that everyone does, like, yeah. That's it.
You can say, Leslie Mack on the track. You can say that.
more on the headphones. More bass. I can hear myself. Come here, mic two. Yeah, okay.
More travel.
All right, Reggie. Enjoy your vacation.
We'll definitely have to do it when I come back.
Yes, definitely. For sure.
Enjoy. Right. Thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, y'all. Bye. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye. Oh my God, it was so great having Reggie on the show.
We love him. And we didn't finish that white privilege, white fragility workplace training video. It was hilarious. It's got like 3 more minutes, but definitely worth watching. Take a listen because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And that actually should have been in and is a segue too.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
White people.
God damn it.
Fucking white people.
You know, we skipped a thing on the, I don't know why it was in the wrong spot, but banking black is.
Nah, we'll talk about that another time.
Okay. Did you want to do 82 generic white guy names and what they say about?
Yeah, I'll talk about that. So people I just thought like it was, I saw this thing and I thought it was really funny because I had all these generic white boy names and then.
They're all white boy names?
Yes.
Okay.
White guy names, yes. Oh. And what it says about them. So there are 82 of them. And so why don't you pick a few numbers
We'll have to start with Drew.
No, it doesn't give you any name. It's just some names. Drew's not on the list.
I'm not generic. 82. Drew's
no,
not.
Drew is not generic.
Andrew's
sorry
on the
to
list?
Tell you.
Andrew's not. Andy. Andrew.
Oh my gosh, what's going on here? Okay. No, it's not on there.
Okay, how about Steve? That's on there. Steve.
Andrew is here. You ready?
Andrew. Yeah, what's
Andrew
saying?
Here. Andrew says the guy you fall in love with wears a lot of flannel.
No, it doesn't.
That's what it says.
Shut the fuck up.
I swear to God, that's
Shut
what it says.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what it says.
Shut the fuck
I
up.
I swear.
It does not.
It says it.
You're not making that up?
I'm not. Number 61 says, Andrew, the guy you fall in love with wears a lot of flannel.
The fuck? That's me? Yo.
I know.
I swear. That's awesome. All right.
What was the other name he said?
Steve.
Okay. Let's see. Steve's definitely on here. Looks like there's a Steve and a Steven. So which one do you want?
Steve.
Steve says, super into climbing, just a touch granola, but it would take getting to know him to really figure that out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is Todd on there?
Let's see.
I don't think that's generic enough.
Oh, Todd is number one.
That's not number one. That's the most generic white guy.
No, it just, I don't think it's an order. It's just a list. You're very like wanting everything cataloged here. It's jokes, so it's not that serious.
But it's the number one joke.
It is the number one joke. Says Todd. He wears loafers, knows specifically what Ralph Lauren line looks best on him.
Yeah, not the Todd.
That's
your
Todd. What else?
How about Matt?
Let's see if they have Matt here. They have Matt and Matthew. Which one would you like?
Matt.
Matt is hits on girls who are way out of his league. Matthew is always threatening to write about you in his future book, by the way. What else?
My blog. I'm going to write about you in my blog.
What else?
I blog about it.
Who else you got?
How about Greg?
Greg is the guy who shows up uninvited to things. Oh my God. Stop it. You guys don't even know. Oh my God, the target
of
to be roasted.
Of course, I'm not just picking random names, you know.
The target to be roasted in all group texts. I can't. you guys.
Say it again. The guy who comes uninvited.
He shows up uninvited.
That's the all best right. inside joke ever. All right, about Bob? I'll pick names I don't know people.
That's too funny. Bob is not on here. Rob is.
Okay, what's Rob got?
It just has an ellipsis, so I don't know what that means.
What about Chad?
Chad. Chad is evil.
I can't get over the what if I'm correct.
It's very funny. You can pick numbers or you can pick names, whichever.
Give me number 69.
69 is, we already did this one. That was Steve.
All right, what's 12?
Really, 69? What are we, in high school here?
I just get, you know, come
number
on.
Number 12 is Philip, literally always at GameStop.
Philip is the name. I'm sure I've told this story, but there's all the different jobs I've got. And mm-hmm. at this one job, we had to travel. And Philip didn't want to travel on the weekend. And we paid a salary, but thought travel on the weekend for this job was unfair. And wanted to have days off in like, what do you call, like compensation, right? Like tit for tat, quid pro quo. And I was like, no, you can't have that. Like, get the fuck out of here. Philip's like 23 or 24. And Philip's dad called me, and Philip's dad gave me a lecture about why he thought Philip should have Monday and Tuesday off. And I was super polite. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, I got it. And then went into the morning sales meeting and fucking destroyed him. And I felt bad. And, like, honest to God, like, for the next, like, it must have been a year. Like, the fax machine would be out of the paper. And somebody's like, call Phil's dad. Fax machine's out of paper.
Dad. Phil's dad.
Where's Philip's dad?
Get Philip's dad together.
We got to get Philip's dad over here. Wait, the fucking copy is down. Philip.
No, Philip. Oh, yeah, Phil. Let's see. Oops.
Didn't you have a person's dad call you at work?
I had a mom call, so that was Philip. Let's see. I'm trying to see which ones are really funny. Jack is just a Republican.
Oh, that's so...
John got straight A's in high school and then started drinking in college. Hasn't stopped drinking since.
What was it, John? The John I know was doing coke, but
close enough.
Close enough.
Adam, he's the guy whose comments in Facebook, in public Facebook event pages, why he can't attend. Adam, nobody in, quote, the chain smokers metro Nashville area cares that you're bummed you can't go because you'll be visiting family in Seattle that weekend. Nobody cares, dude.
Nobody cares. So did you hear about, were there more names you wanted to do?
Let me see. I thought there was just one that was really funny. Dylan's parents are stoners. Dave, you don't see it coming, fuckboy. Dan is hot.
Dave is a fuckboy you don't see coming.
You don't see him coming, but he is. Alec, with a C, invites you to all of his DJ gigs. Jim peaked playing intramural frisbee in college. Zach raised in a super nice upper middle class suburb and got two girls pregnant. They were friends, by the way.
They got both girls pregnant?
Both of them. Jeffrey really loves his mom.
Jeffrey, okay.
Reed named his bong Mike Wazowski.
His bong's Mike Wazowski. Dude, give me Mike Wazowski.
Jason wants to date you, but you do not want to date him.
Go pack up my bong. Luck be a lady tonight. Hey, you know, John, that's a obscure, not too obscure. We've done it before. What's that movie reference? Who do we owe a t-shirt from for getting the...
Oh, yeah, we do. I think it's...
I don't remember who it is. If you're listening again and you remember...
I think it's Sanity Check.
No.
Yeah.
Sanity Chick, not Check.
Sanity...
Thief?
Thief, that's it. Sanity. Yeah, I think that's
we owe them a t-shirt for guessing that that was Gus. But name the movie where... quick, go get my bong. Luck be
I don't think those are in juxtaposition to
that's
one another.
Same, but that's the movie.
Yeah,
the phrase,
that is the movie. The
quick, go get my bong, and then going into sing and dance.
So you wanted to talk about something about bats, and I don't know what this is. So
I can't.
Enlighten me.
I really, there's times people, like, I'm a very white guy.
True.
Come to me with white fuckery and nonsense, and I will, like I explained today about white people using the N-word and shit. I'm happily able to describe white fuckery, but even some things are beyond me, you know? Like, I'm very, very white, but... there's whiteness that I just can't explain.
You can, huh?
Yeah. And this is one of them. And it's two dudes getting charged with licking bats in a cave.
Wait, why would you be charged with that?
Well, so the bats and the bats cave are a habitat that's protected because they have some sort of like disease called like white nose something, and it's a spore and a mold, and like kills like 80% of a colony, and you can move it from cave to cave by walking in it with your shoes and shit. So you're not supposed to be walking around in these places. Like they've you know, it's called white nose syndrome, and it's responsible for 6 million bat deaths. So they don't want you fucking around. And these two idiots went in, fucking were on like FaceTime or Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and like, badass time, bro. Oh man, the things you do make me so proud. Touching the bat with your tongue, not so much. It was worth it. Bet it was fun. Yeah, we both licked a bat. Ha ha.
What?
Literally. And they posted it on like social media and got caught. But unfortunately, all they can do is like issue a fucking like $250 fine or some shit. But
so weird.
I just, like, why would you go into a cave and lick a fucking hibernating bat? Mm-mm. That's the, like, you know, like we talked today, like, just there isn't racial strife and stress. So, like, we white folk gotta, like, jump out of planes with wingsuits and shit to, like, wee, like, get our thrills and shit. Maybe that's this. Maybe it's just, like, I'm so bored that I'm doing fucking things like licking bats and I don't know.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Someone tagged me on it, like, literally was like, very white guy, you need to explain this. I'm like, I can't. Mm. I cannot. That's fucking, I don't know what that is. That's fucking bizarre.
It's fucking white people. That's for fucking sure.
It sure is. Yes, all motherfucking cops.
Yes, all cops. It's actually about prison, but obviously still in the same sector. Talking specifically about incarcerated deaf people and how they're locked in a prison inside of a prison. So this is a part of a 9-month investigation and part of one part of a multimedia series on deaf prisoners. Excuse me. Silent Voices is truly silent. The group's three members are doing what looks a lot like a dance in front of a classroom at a state prison near the banks of the Mississippi River, just south of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, performing their version of the song I Believe by R. Kelly. Instead of singing, the performers are interpreting R. Kelly's lyrics into ASL, the sign language most commonly used here in the U.S. It's an animated language, obviously, if any of you have seen a sign language, I'm sure you have on TV and such. And the three men in silent voices are stunning in this way. The performance is part ASL, part gospel choreography, and it's a contagiously uplifting in stark contrast with the backdrop of armed guards and barbed wire. The classroom erupts into applause. Standing at the back of the classroom, Susan Griffin is beaming with pride. Griffin, a lead attorney for the state prison system, says the song is a real clout pleaser for the gospel revivals held at Angola, the notoriously brutal prison farm to the north. For me, it brings everything together. The members of Silent Voices and a dozen or so classmates are all part of the Louisiana Department of Corrections ASL interpreting program, which Griffin touts as one of a kind. At least in the U.S., qualified prisoners can earn a certificate in ASL interpreting, which could potentially lead to job opportunities if they're released. Louisiana also uses these offender interpreters to interpret for the deaf population in its vast prison system. But most of the time when deaf people are behind prison, they are cut off completely from the world. Most don't allow for ASL-assisted phone calls to home. And they basically are locked within a prison that's inside of a prison. So they don't even have any of the opportunity to reach out beyond the walls in any strategic way. So paying professionals outside to interpret for deaf prisoners would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And so this is an option for them to be able to do it. They train prisoners on the inside to translate and then, or to interpret, and then they are able to pay them like no money at all to do these services for prisoners that are inside. So it's like, they see this as a win-win. And I read this article and I thought about it as such a fucking lose-lose. Like, they tout this program as like it's amazing and we can use the prisoners to help these other prisoners, and that sounds good on if you're looking at it from the fact that services are not available, but at what cost? You're paying, you know, below slave wages for services that I just hate prison and I hate everything about it.
You know, and even the like, you're like, right, literally, they're trying to describe
the machinations
as a like, oh, we're so proud, it's a win-win. Like, even, you're right, it's fucked. Talk about hearing people that aren't hearing impaired, mm-hmm. impaired, the phone is like a, I don't know what to call it. It's like a method of abuse. It's like $3 a minute. They got a fucking, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, access to and the ability to make phone calls and talk to family and friends is leveraged in, you know, really inappropriate, you know, especially for financial gain for the, for folks that are hearing, you know, able, right? Mm-hmm. It's already fuck ass. Now, if you're hearing impaired, I think the prison inside of prison is more accurate. I don't think anything, you know, I'm glad there's, I guess, a, what was the name of the individuals that are doing the program? Like, I guess that's good.
Silent Voices. I just think it's just like, you know, when you think about the, like, degradations of prison and the machinations that they do behind bars to, like, justify this, you know, inhumane way of treating human beings. It's just like, I don't even know. Like, and all of this, all of these, all this work, these programs, all of this shit, none of it is actually going to prepare any of these people to, like, really, you know, be reintroduced into society in a productive manner. Like, it's just like, I don't know. I'm just, ugh.
And we're going to talk. The piece I'm going to talk about and then the piece about journalists, it's just all of this is framed in such a just, you know, it's almost trying to make it sound like, oh, look at the good we're doing. Like, no, you're fucking putting lipstick on a pig.
It's true. It's just like gross and I absolutely hate it. So I just wanted to, I found this article because I know we had talked about the word Latinx and talking about why people are using it more and more often. And so I don't, when you said it to me, I thought, wow, maybe other people are having the same reaction and not really like too into what it
is. Yeah. Well, and as soon as you said, because Spanish is a gendered, right? They have male and female nouns and pronouns and versions and, and verbiage of everything. I was like, oh, of course. That makes perfect sense because otherwise you don't have, you can't be both. You can't be inclusive. I got it. But,
right.
So what's the,
Well, I just wanted to mention because maybe other people didn't know why. So just Latinx is a gender neutral alternative to the Latino, Latina, and even Latina. Used by scholars, activists, and an increasing number of journalists, Latinx is quickly gaining popularity among the general population. It's part of a linguistic revolution that aims to move beyond gender binaries and is inclusive of intersecting identities of Latin American descendants. In addition to men and women from all racial backgrounds, Latinx also makes room for people who are trans, queer, agender, or non-binary. Gender nonconforming or gender fluid. Jack Gutierrez says, quote, in Spanish, the masculinized version of words is considered gender neutral, but that obviously doesn't work for some of us because I don't think it's appropriate to assign masculinity as gender neutral when it isn't. The X, in a lot of ways, is a way of rejecting the gendering of words to begin with, especially since Spanish is such a gendered language.
So. Yeah, and I don't know if, and when you say Spanish is a gendered language, for those that don't know Spanish or don't speak another language, or haven't given much thought to
romantic languages.
Any language that uses a male and female in this way, because English is more the exception than the norm in that regard. So there's him and her, and then we have they, which can be hims or her. So you could use they in a relatively inclusive manner in English fairly easily. In Spanish, the him and her, Aisha, Aisho, is one's masculine, one's feminine. And then you have hims and hers that's masculine and feminine, Aishas, Aishas. And then the version of they is going to be comprised of how the group is. And it's strange, but if the group is all women, Aishas will work. If the group has one man, 99 women and one man, linguistically, the AP style manual is Aishos, right? But in that language, it doesn't have the same overly deliberately masculine, you know what I'm saying? Like if we were to say like men's, which is kind of what they're saying. So in Spanish, like a kind of like,
saying men instead of
so man. They don't have them. They have hers and hims, and they use hims for like all of them.
Right.
And Latinx eliminates that. And I think it's great. I think it's very, and I always found that not inappropriate, but you know, just that linguistically 99 women and one man, and now the word that's appropriate and the only one they have in the language is, you know, his Aishos, right? So I think Latinx is cool. I wonder if Spanish speaking countries and places and style guides will start having different.
Well, you know, some people are upset. It's like disrespectful to the Spanish language, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
They're trying to call it some sort of linguistic imperialism. I put quotes around that. Oh, it's such bullshit. Interesting. Because really, like, Spanish in Latin America is linguistic imperialism. Like, when the conquistadors quote unquote conquered South America in particular, there was like thousands of indigenous languages.
Right.
Where they at? Not to mention the erasure of African languages and all sorts of other things through colonialism. Like, you don't get to sit on a high horse when you literally spent the entirety of history erasing other people's languages. It's a little
Where is the etymology?
Mm-hmm. It started in 2004, by the way.
Okay. And is it from, you know, people of Latin origin?
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't other groups of people trying to ascribe. It was Latinos
queer communities on the internet in 2004.
They
started using it, and then by 2015, you know, you see as gender fluidity becomes much more of a you know, mainstream topic, you see it being used. And again, you know, you start to see guys using it. I mean, I see it in print like
a lot
all the time now.
I just want to make sure it wasn't appropriated or someone, you know, if it came from that community, then I'm all absolutely all for it. I think it, like I said, it linguistically, I think sounds, I don't say better, but I
think it sounds way better. I think for, as a writer, like, I think it's much better because now you don't have to think about like the
correct.
The O, and it's again, it's all,
I mean, there was a period of time.
I mean, but you see, I think we talked about the other day that the New York Times style guy just added they as a singular.
I remember in my own personal and business endeavors, right? Like, you just, you know, as you're a professional and you're doing things and you're reading blogs and trying to improve and kind of like stay abreast of your, you know, the work that you do, and if it includes kind of writing communications in any way, it wasn't, you know, it's probably like 94, 95, mid 90s, where the style guide, you know, whatever, was sort of to say him or her, his or hers, right? To kind of include both. And then I think it was maybe right into the late 90s, 2000, where it was kind of like, just use her, right? If you have a choice and, you know, you're going to pick one, instead of saying him or her, just use the female and stick with female. And now I would say it's kind of shifted even more. And I think it's now more, I don't know what's more neutral than picking female, they, I guess, or them, or not picking gender, or writing in a way that avoids, you know, gender binaries and gendering specifically, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
Like, I'm talking about writing just like, you know, like
whatever.
You're writing like an example, like, oh, you know, so and so, like, you're going to write like a, you know, ipsum lorem type text. A long time ago, it would be, you know, she or he or him or her, and then it would be just her, and now it's like they.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of great.
It is great.
So we were talking about language and things and framing, and I'm not even going to read the whole article because I saw it. It came across my purview. Yeah. And the title is How One Family Is Sending 13 Kids to College Living Debt-Free and Still Plans to Retire Early. And I was like, well, that sounds fucking unbelievable. Like my first thought, like, everybody was like, wow, how are they doing it? They got to be like clipping coupons.
That's funny because my thought was they're clearly white.
Oh, no, I knew that. But I was like, well, how are they doing it? And it didn't take long. It didn't take long. And I'm trying to see if I can pick out the right phrases. So Sam Fitzgerald, Fitzinger, prowls the aisles of an Aldi grocery store with an engineer's precision. Workers greet her mostly by name. Several trays of chicken into a huge cart. That on fresh blueberries for $1.79. In February, she recalls the time the no-frill store had a sale on potatoes, 10 pounds for 99 cents, and she bought 60 pounds. Her husband loves them. So it goes on, you know, some of these like frugality, austerity kind of things, you know, and then used words like, this is very impressive, but not as impressive as this. Lifelong residents of Bowie, Maryland, lead a single-income family in one of the country's most expensive regions. Rob's income never topped $50,000. He's now 51 and earns just over $100,000 as a software tester. So let's first of all say that, like, how do they do it? They're already in the do me a favor. Would you Google what is the $100,000? What percentile does that put you in? It's got to put you in the top, like, at least 20%, more like 15%.
I don't even know what to say.
But so that's the first thing. They paid off their mortgage early 4 years ago. They have no debt. They never have. Wow, it's unbelievable. But they go on to say a couple other things, and their frugality. They were given a car by their friends. They were able to put $30,000 down on the house, which I'm sure they didn't say where or how they got that as like a loan and shit. It just it was written as like, oh my God, it's so amazing. Look how great they are. And they just absolutely avoided every single piece of, I would say, white opportunity that is afforded, and they don't even, it's not that it's not mentioned, it's completely
ignored.
It's there, it's missing,
obviously
it's a missing piece,
but the data is there, but they don't name it.
Yeah, and without that, you really aren't left to read this like, wow, it's amazing, they're so frugal. And it's literally like, you know, their sister gave them a van, and they had a church member nailed $3,000 to the door, like literally, you know. It's like, what the Jesus Christ, like, this isn't like...
I mean, what got me was that the grandparents were gave each of the kids like thousands of dollars.
Oh, right.
Each? Yeah, all 13 of them?
Listen. The number that the grandparents gave was like the exact dollar amount that you don't have to fucking then pay taxes on. Mm-hmm. Right? So they're giving it to them every year.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how are they going to college? How are they going to do it? It's amazing.
Amazing.
Good news, the home cost $150,000. The Fitzgeralds put down $50,000.
So they just have $50,000?
Yeah, $50,000.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
You know what? Fuck that article.
Yeah, relatives gutted it and made it livable. Mm. Youth groups were over here ripping up carpet and talking down walls. Someone gave them a wood stove. A relative gifted them a used couch. Later, another was left on the curb for them to take. Years later, the enlarged kitchen using 2% finance offers good for 12 months. And months later, using 2% financing.
Stop.
I get that shit, but it's because I'm white. 11 months later, they paid off the loan without paying any interest. The project cost $28,000. So you're able to have $28,000
extra in a year. Yeah. You know what? Just stop.
With family members doing much of the demolition, painting, and decorating.
I can't. Just stop right now. Anyways, white people. Yeah. That's a lot of white privilege right there.
Oh, it's just so much.
I actually hate any article that's like, how are they doing it? I find it to be such like poor people shaming, because in the framing of all of those articles, it's like, well, what are you doing wrong? They did it. It's like there's this culture we have of shaming poor people. I hate it.
Yeah.
And these articles are always like that. I see them all the time.
One of the children, when I was 15, she bought a 1994 Ford Escort with 30,000 miles from $2,600 from her savings. A 15-year-old had $2,600 in savings.
Stop it. I ain't got $2,600.
I still drive it 5 years later.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Most people drive a car for more than 5 years, sweetheart. But okay. Good to know how off your actual like understanding of the reality of people's lives is.
Yeah. Well, so but we talked about that, this framing and the language and just the, you know, the way journalists talk about things.
Yeah. So I came across this article. I thought you'd appreciate it because we talk about, you know, hashtag propaganda all the time. And this great article in Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting talks about cop speak. 7 ways journalists use police jargon to obscure the truth. So I thought it was good to kind of go through these because I think that we hear them all the time and sometimes they may not like stick out for everybody as much as they should. So the number one is, I actually mentioned it literally earlier in this show. Yep. When we were talking to Reggie, which is officer involves shooting. Probably the most popular, most frequently criticized example of cop speak, officer involves shooting, is a textbook example of Robert J. Lifton called a thought terminating cliche. Mm. It describes an act of violence without assigning blame and is almost never used for when a police officer is the victim. Only when the police have shot someone, justified or not.
Yeah, you never hear officer involved shooting, meaning that the mm-hmm. officer was shot.
Yeah.
That's man, officer down, yes. Code this or that.
Yeah. By describing an event alongside the person who did it without connecting the two, officer involved shooting vaguely alludes to what happened without the emotional response this would normally evoke, which is like if you acknowledge that there's somebody that was also involved, now you're wondering, oh, well, what happened to them?
Yeah, that's I made that earlier in the comment, like, you know, gun did leave, bullet left, holster did mm-hmm. aim in general direction, may have struck person and body.
Right. And also, beyond the term, the headline itself where they say that the man in question wasn't killed after, it says man killed after officer involved shooting. No, he was killed in an officer involved shooting. So even that casual relationship is just ignored in that. So number two is passive and segmented language. So they say teenager shot, killed in Ferguson apartment complex. That was the initial report about Mike Brown. Teenager shot, killed in Ferguson apartment complex.
Yeah, they do that.
Was
shit
it by
all the
a friend, a gang member? Did a gun go off by accident? The headline gives no clue. The first paragraph is even more torture. This was published 8/9/2014, so the day that Mike Brown was killed. A shooting in Ferguson has tensions riding high between residents and police. Saturday afternoon, a police involved shooting occurred at the Canfield Green apartment complex in the 2900 block of Canfield. A teenager was shot and killed. An officer from the Ferguson Police Department was involved in the shooting.
Fuck me, dude.
But you don't say who shot who. They just say he was involved. What does that even mean? Dude. Is there a third person there? By design, they make it murky. Number three is suspect / subject. Those who've been arrested, shot, or had any interaction with the police are routinely referred to as suspects or subjects, terms that prejudice the reader by conveying a sense of criminality before the details of the case are known. Baltimore police detained Freddie Gray for a relatively trivial charge of possessing a knife, an arrest prosecutors later deemed illegal, but he was repeatedly referred to as a suspect after it was revealed he sustained fatal injuries by police. Here we go. Quote, this is CBS Baltimore. Police say the video doesn't show officers using force, but they do suspect the suspect was brought to Maryland shock trauma with injuries. The Baltimore Sun said the suspect ran and police caught him, he said.
Yeah, not the victim who had his neck severed.
This one gets me all the time, which is officials / sources say.
Yeah, let me talk about this because this, I had a whole tweet there on this fucking horse shit, dude. And Christine fucking DeByers and fucking St. Louis and fucking all these fucking it's so grotesque because one, it's complete hearsay. They literally sit at these editors, journalists sit at their desk, pick up a phone, and a cop or somebody from the police department calls them and says, this is what happened, right? So it isn't a goddamn fucking journalism. It's a fucking press release. They're fucking printing a press release that might as well be hearsay. And it's just all the time gross. Plus, Christine, and I'm sure many of these individuals that do the crime beats, they've got a vested interest. They've got to print the goddamn press release because guess what? If they don't, if they were to do their job and investigate the police, they don't get the tips on the crime beat they're responsible for writing. DeByers has at least one book about a case in fucking St. Louis, and the only reason she could write that book is because she's buddy-buddy with the cops, and she remains buddy-buddy by writing their press releases and not questioning them. Official sources say. That means some fucking cop picked up a phone and called you and you printed it. Mm-hmm. It means nothing. It's a fucking lie. I wish we would literally read that as the cops' propaganda machine is lying and this is what they're saying. Just discount it entirely.
Mm-hmm.
The phrase official sources say, bullshit.
Yep.
Delete it.
It is. It's total crap. I remember when at the MLK Dare March, we had that problem. Like, we literally, we worked so hard to arrange to get a shot that would show the entire crowd. So we could get, like, stop motion or whatever they call, you know, is that what they call it? Stop motion.
Well, we want, they had a time lapse. Yes, we wanted time-lapse. A time lapsed photo so that we could have a irrefutable metric for how many people were there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And we know how many people.
And when I say that we had to work hard, like literally a lawyer contacted me and was like, I have an office that's here. We're not going to be there that day. You guys can use the windows of my law firm.
Yeah.
Like, and it was white dude.
There was a lot at stake because in Philadelphia, MLK, it's really bastardized. Ooh. It's this day of service shit.
Horrible there.
And all the corporate, like Comcast closes down. You go into work at Comcast, get on a school bus, and then you go paint schools. What? Like, that's not MLK. All right, but okay, whatever. So to get people to a march was kind of hard. Like, it was like, we're breaking rank, right? Having like a little bit of a march is not the normal fucking like white MLK Day thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to make sure we had a lot of people, and we were hoping, and I think we succeed. I shouldn't say we because it wasn't we, but the power and the organization that held the coalition that held the MLK Dare march in Philadelphia that day. The goal was to have the largest march in Philadelphia history.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's something, right? Mm-hmm. So this count wasn't just like, okay, whatever. Was it this number, that number?
Right.
It wasn't like respect or money was on the line. It was like, hey, we want to be able to say we had the biggest march. So it was a big deal.
Yeah. So, you know, we had the march. We had the shot. Maybe I can find the link in a share. Shout out to Media Matters in Philly. And they literally were on the news. We're watching. And they talked to one cop.
No, they talk to
the spokesperson.
And, you know, he wears that white fucking uniform.
I hate that dude.
And, you know that one dude with the brown fucking coat and the little armband. They're always there. Those two fucking guys. But he's the source. He's the source. And I heard him. I heard him give the fucking quote because the goddamn the one reporter lady was embedded with us, right? She's marching with us from the Inquirer. So I heard him give the quote, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, we're officially saying it's about 3,000." Cop, please. top motherfucking please. Isn't that what they said? 3,500?
Yeah.
Was their official count?
Yeah,
it was like 75 or 8,000
people. Yeah, it was
people.
Like 8,000 people. When we did actually have to like pay somebody to actually do the counting. Like there's a formula you can do by volume of people because we did get the shot.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, but we had about 8,000.
Now you've got a reporter embedded with us doing a story, and she knows it ain't no fucking 3,500, but there's her fucking newspaper writing a story with an official source saying that, you know, quote, and I remember, too, they said official sources say 3,500, but more, you know, I think organizers estimate more like 7,000 or 8,000, and then the reporter says it seemed like quite a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, like he couldn't quite be like the cops were lying, but you know,
yeah.
Official sources say 3,500. Organizers say 7,000. It seemed like quite a crowd.
It seemed like a big crowd.
It's like
that guy was great, Jim Garner. Yeah. Shout out,
we miss you, Philly.
Yeah. Number five is juvenile. The term juvenile is used almost exclusively in the context of youth crime, giving police and uncritical media an opportunity to criminalize children or teenagers. This piece from the Washington Post just last year, for example, two juveniles are accused of setting an Oxon Hill playground on fire. Two juveniles are accused of setting an Oxon Hill playground on fire. That produced columns of black smoke that could be seen for miles Thursday afternoon. Why not use the value neutral term children or teenagers? How is one supposed to tell the difference between a 9-year-old and a 17-year-old? Everyday language meant to delineate between ages is blurred into the catch-all juvenile. This technique was infamously used by the Baltimore Police Department during April 2015 protests following the death of Freddie Gray, when the department tweeted, "There's a group of juveniles in the area of Mondawin Mall," a declaration retweeted and referenced uncritically by several media outlets. When they failed to mention at the time, as most media did, was that the juveniles in question were students who go through Mondawin Mall every day. It's the main bus hub for thousands of students. By using the term juveniles, the Baltimore police and those who recited their tweet as neutral information turned an everyday occurrence in West Baltimore into a menacing activity in urgent need of martial crackdown. And crackdown they did. Number six is discharged weapon. Police discharged their weapons and Braziel, who did not fire any shots, died at the scene. That's from Reuters. About Alva Braziel in Houston. What does that even mean?
Fucking
discharged. Number seven is altercation, like clashes. Altercation is a popular catch-all to describe any violent exchange between police and civilians. The term has long been criticized, being noted 10 years ago as a best avoided piece of cop speak by Doug Fisher, a former AP News editor and journalism professor at University of South Carolina. He says, altercation, press for specifics. Was it a fight, an argument, a shoving match, a shouting match? One of the stark examples of this euphemism came from the shooting of Walter Scott in South Carolina, as Fair reported, before video surfaced, what the local media described was the killing took place as a result of an altercation, a term that implies parity of violence. Police say an altercation then began between Slager and Scott, but resulting in a fight for the officers.
And listen, they use like five of these in that same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Police say.
Yeah.
That's where it always starts. And then literally, the official sources say there was an altercation where a weapon was discharged, right, and an officer was, and a juvenile suspect, fuck.
It got even worse because the local ABC affiliate picked up that thing, and they dropped the police say altogether. They just use it as fact.
There
a
you
man
go.
Involved in a traffic stop
there you
that
go.
Turned into a physical altercation with North Charleston
there
police officer
go.
Died Saturday after being shot by the officer.
And there you go. And that's how it happens. And that little fucking lie goes around the world a bajillion times. It's all the damage. And days, weeks, months later, when something comes out, it's I don't say it's too late, but damage is done.
It is
damage
definitely is done. Definitely done. So we wanted to talk about some TV, books, movies. The Get Down. We've been watching The Get Down.
Yeah, no.
You've been liking it. Not liking it. What's your deal?
I remember thinking maybe I follow too many profile black folk. But I thought the like black Twitter sort of take was like, man, Baz Luhrmann, the fuck.
That was my take. I was like, I'm ready to shave. And especially because for me, like, this is taking place in the late 70s, early 80s.
That's your day, New York City.
Like, that's not just like me and my age, but it's me. Like, that's where I grew up. That's my heart.
I'm with you.
Like, I know this story. So it's definitely,
So you and I had the exact same hypothesis. And that is that they marketed it very poorly.
Horribly.
Yeah. So I remember it was supposed to be birth of hip hop as told by Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, it was not even birth. They said the origin.
Yeah, the origin.
Hip-hop.
Right. And so I would say it's my suggested, it's now obviously too late, would have been, you know, like a Baz Luhrmann stylized, you know, period piece set against the backdrop of Brooklyn and the birth of hip hop, you know, because it isn't really about the birth of hip hop. It's a Baz Luhrmann stylized period piece with hip hop as sort of like a character, you know, as a patina with which this is shot through. And so for me, we've only watched 2-3 episodes. I'm not going to lie. I kind of like it. But I liked no shade. Like Moulin Rouge is – it's one of my top like 10 favorite movies of all time. Like I think it's a stunning, beautiful – and I remember at the time being like, who? Ewan McGregor? Tom Cruise's wife? Huh? What? I don't know what this is going to be, but whatever. And I was like, whoa, that's really, really good. Like just visually and musically, I think it's Baz Luhrmann's like, you know, it's his best piece. So I dig him. I think he's a good, you know, auteur in that sort of medium, that whatever his vision, blah, 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 blah. But I've liked it. I think for me, I can tell the black character development is missing more black individuals behind the scenes, if that makes any sense.
You think so?
Not a lot, but there's a little bit of a white gaze in some of the black character development. You know, not a lot. There's a difference between when you watch The Wiz live on NBC and you're like, oh, that's black all the way through. Everything about it's black. The costume design, you know what I'm talking about? Like when they redid the Wiz, it was like, holy cow, like that really was like, you know, they did a really good job.
Right.
I feel the same about, what was another thing we just saw that was like very clear that they had black folk involved at various stages throughout. And I think that's true about this show, but I don't know what it is that just there's a tiny little bit, maybe it's his like, the kung fu sort of like,
but to element. Me that's the fantastical part of it. I think
maybe that's Baz.
Yeah, it is Baz because that's how Baz is. Like he's definitely like there's a lot of mysticism to it. But I also think like to me, if they're telling a story, these aren't real people because they aren't real people. Even Grandmaster Flash's like appearance in the show is like cursory at best. So that everybody's made up. And to me, it's like I hope, and we've only been through I think 2 episodes now. I hope it unfolds into you know, a story that shows the power of hip hop, a story that shows, you know, what it meant to people, and that there is a mythical nature to that. It is, you know, that flower that grows out of concrete. It is that, you know, art form that comes from pain. And I think that it's interesting to see. The thing I'll say about Baz is that he's not a writer, right? I don't think he didn't write the screenplay. I don't think it's something that he put pen to paper. He is a visionary. And so he is able to marry concepts with visuals really well. And I think he achieves that here. So that's what I would say about it.
Yeah, and maybe I'm incorrect.
I don't see him as telling the story at all from his perspective. And I guess that's what I would say.
Maybe I shouldn't say that they're like not well developed characters in terms of black, whatever. I should say that it's the complaint I think people had would have been like, you know, Baz's white gaze kind of whatever. It is there. You can see it, but it's not so much. I mean, it's a, I don't want to call it like a white gaze. Like Baz is white, so of course that's kind of like true. Like that it couldn't be. It's Baz's vision, like, and he's white, so therefore it is a white gaze. But it's not as much of a like fuck ass white gaze as it is just an auteur's visual perspective that happens to be kind of white. If that makes, I don't know if that's any different. I don't know if the outcome's any different, but I don't hate it. Let me ask you, what do you think of the characters? Do you think the black characters are, all of them are well developed? Or do you think that there's, outside of the main characters, there's a lot of like real cursory, like borderline tropey stuff?
Oh, I think there's definitely tropey stuff, but I think he's telling a tropey story. That's okay. What I mean. Like to me, it reads like a fairy tale.
Maybe that's what I should do more.
It reads like a storybook. It's not about the details of anything.
Yes.
He's trying to draw parallel between, I would say he's trying to tell a story that is depicting the essence of hip hop, but not about hip hop.
And you know,
that's how I felt. That's how it's landed.
I'll blame the marketing team. Mm-hmm. None of my issues are with the product. It's with everything that maybe I came in thinking like they really set me up poorly for it. And if they had said it's a fantasy tale set against the back, I don't think as many people would have watched. I'd have been like, well, that sounds weird. But I like it. I think it's been good. I would not say, you know, oh, you have to see it. But I wouldn't say that you'll be mad seeing it either so far, three episodes in.
No, for sure. I'm excited. I'm definitely going to continue watching. Hopefully it'll, I don't know if it's meant for a second season or if this is a short-term thing, but I'm excited for more. I know it's very expensive to make, so there's
I'm sure.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, just wanted to mention, I caught up with that and I kind of dragged you into it during the end of the first season. I love this show.
It's funny.
Very funny.
She's good. The main
I love her boobs.
Good.
I know that.
She did a whole bit about them.
I'm here for a girl with big boobs.
They go
on
into
TV.
Song, right?
I like all of that. It's good.
It's not bad. I liked, although I like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I love Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Really? I don't like that nearly as much. I find that like super tropey and borderline offensive all the time.
Really?
I mean, they have Jane Krakowski playing a Native American woman. Like, it's weird.
Wait. Jane Krakowski is a Native American in that? The rich white lady?
Yes.
When is she? Maybe I haven't seen all these episodes.
Yeah,
when is she Native American?
If you don't know that, then you're not a fan of Kimmy Schmidt at all then.
I've only seen like the last maybe 8 or 10 episodes.
I mean, it's been a big storyline this season because she's literally like been trying to get money back to like win for her tribe. It's terrible.
What? Jane Krakowski?
Yes.
The rich one? They lost all their money trying to get married? I haven't seen any of that show. I take that back. I cannot. If I don't know that, I can't, I don't know, thumb up or down it, I guess. I had no idea.
Yep.
So I dragged you to Don't Breathe.
You did drag me to Don't Breathe.
And?
I liked it.
It was good.
I did. I really did like it.
It wasn't, it was tense. It was fraught. It was kind of scary. What I'm glad it wasn't was sort of the like Paranormal Activity where it's just like dark and then like shit comes out of nowhere to startle you. Like startled is not scary. I mean, it can be, but I don't think startled is what I'm going for in a horror movie. And I thought, interestingly, at our theater, which we've been to quite a lot, and I'm not going to say that there's not a lot of black people going to this theater, but it's up in the northwest side of town. And I don't know if that's where black folk live necessarily, but it's a nice theater. And I think it might have been one of the few that was playing this show. It wasn't everywhere, maybe?
I think it was pretty wide. I don't think it was that off. I thought it was pretty wide.
But it was... I ain't seen more black people in a theater.
It was definitely the most black people I've seen. But I told you, that doesn't surprise me because black people love horror films.
Yeah.
We're like part and parcel with that genre. So
it was kind of nice.
I will say it was the most I've had to struggle to not scream at the screen. I like really, like I wanted to literally yell at the girl.
And what's and that actress's dude. Name?
I don't know what her real name is, but
she's from something.
She's from Suburbia.
Yes.
You know what it's called? Suburbia.
Yeah, Suburbia. I liked her in that.
Yeah. Was it called Suburbia? I thought it was like a pun on that, though.
I thought it was called Suburbia, too. Okay, I liked, so I also, I know you didn't like it as much, but the remake of The Evil Dead.
Suburgatory.
Suburgatory.
Thank
you're right.
You. I was like, it wasn't called Suburbia.
You're right.
Okay.
You're right. You're right.
I'm right, bitches.
Oh, please clap. You're right. So anything else?
I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it for today.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing else?
Nope.
Good night, everybody.
High five.